Everyone, I'm going to call the meeting to order. We do have a quorum and welcome you here. We have a busy day. The faster we move this morning, the sooner we'll be able to go home tonight because this meeting will go into recess and we will reconvene at 6. With that, we would first like to welcome Representative Winkler, who has House File 605, and the chair will move House File 605 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus finance bill.
Madam Chair.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to amend a motion and send it back to the House Environment Policy Committee. I understand they're meeting tonight and ask for a roll call.
That motion has been made and a roll call has been requested. The clerk will take the roll. The chair votes no.
Falk?
No.
McNamara?
Yes.
Anderson? Absent. Benson?
No.
Bly?
No.
Clark? Absent. Dill? Absent. Erickson?
No.
Fabian?
Yes.
Freiberg? Hackbarth? Excused. Hamilton?
Yes.
Hansen?
No.
Kahn? Keel? Poppy?
No.
Torkelson?
Yes.
Ward?
There being 8 nays and 4 ayes, that does not pass. Welcome, Representative Winkler. I have moved that House File 605 be laid over for possible inclusion, and we would like to hear from you.
And Madam Chair, there is an amendment that I'd like to
okay, we have the amendment, and it's the DE3, and I'll move the DE3 to get it in the shape the author would like. All those in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposition?
No.
No.
The amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, House File 605 is also known as the Toxic Free Kids Act. The DE amendment, which you just adopted, significantly changes the bill from the version that passed through the Commerce Committee and the Health Policy Committee last session. This bill provides information to consumers about priority chemicals that may be harmful to children and that are in children's products. It does not regulate the use of those chemicals. It does not phase them out. It does not do any of the things that the industry was concerned about last year. This is simply a reporting bill requiring the PCA to post the reports of those priority chemicals and as they are used in children's products and put them on the PCA's website. The industry pays for this. There will be a fiscal note that's currently being prepared. It's somewhere, I think, going to end up in the $300,000 to $400,000 range. And Madam Chair, I appreciate the committee's time to address this issue and to provide for the cost of this consumer empowering legislation. And Madam Chair, I do have one testifier in support of the bill. Her name is Meredith Salmi from St. Louis Park, and she will talk about the consumer benefits of this approach.
Welcome to the committee.
Thanks. Madam Chair, good morning. My name is Meredith Salmi Vitalik, and my husband Tom and I live in St. Louis Park, and we are really proud parents of our daughter Ada, who is nearly 2 years old. As any parent can attest, toddlers are pretty great at getting into and climbing on just about everything. My day is spent keeping Ada safe and out of harm, and protecting Ada is a job I take very seriously. Unfortunately, there's a lot in our home that I can't keep Ada safe from. things that until recently wouldn't have even crossed my mind. Things like formaldehyde in her bubble bath, toxic flame retardant in her favorite toddler-sized chair, or bisphenol A in her food containers. Like most parents, when I first discovered that these chemicals are in products I buy for my young child, I thought that's crazy. There isn't some agency checking, double-checking, or triple-checking the chemicals children are exposed to on a daily basis. And what shocked me is that really no one is checking. As a parent, I do my best to buy products that will stimulate Ada's development and help her grow. However, these very same products could contain chemicals that have a profound effect on her health and development, effects such as cancer, autism, or reproductive harm. That's really scary to me. So with every new children's product my husband and I need to buy, it seems I have to do a research project to find the safest option. I feel like I need to be a chemist to know for certain if a product doesn't contain formaldehyde, bisphenol A, or a whole host of other chemicals harmful to my daughter. As a busy mom, I can only do so much. I am asking you to help me keep my daughter Ada safe from these toxic chemicals. Minnesota needs a comprehensive policy like the Toxic Free Kids Act that will allow us parents to know if some of the most harmful chemicals are lurking in the products we use for our children each and every day. Please help protect Minnesota's kids like Ada, respond to us parents, and support the Toxic Free Kids Act. Thank you.
Questions for the testifier? I don't see any questions. Thank you so much. Representative Winkler, would you like to go over the bill, just the amendment a little bit more, and then we will hear from anybody in the audience who would like to testify.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As I mentioned, the Department of Health determines what are the 9 priority chemicals which are known through research to have an impact on health, specifically children's health. The 9 chemicals currently are BPA, cadmium, lead, formaldehyde, phthalates, 3 different versions of those, and 2 toxic flame retardants. The first step in this legislation is that manufacturers have to provide initial notification to the PCA about whether those 9 priority chemicals are in children's products. 2 years later, they have to submit a full report with detailed information that goes down to the individual product level. Again, it doesn't have to be labeled on the product as it's sold. It simply has to be reported. Step 3, 2 years after the first report, a second report is due requiring them to notify whether they're still using those priority chemicals. And step 4 is, and thereafter, is every 2 years they have to continue to report on whether their products contain those chemicals. I think the industry will talk about how the state of Washington has a similar program of reporting and that they would like to model their program exactly on Washington State. But I think Minnesota's program actually will work quite well for Minnesota and without causing the necessity of our tying our state law to another state's reporting laws. Since last session, as I mentioned, Madam Chair, and as represented in this DE amendment, we have made significant changes to this bill as compared to last year, which actually required a phase out of those 9 priority chemicals over time in their use in various products. So I guess I would just reiterate, Madam Chair, this is reporting. This is for children's products. And the model for this is based on another state that is already doing this. So I think that national manufacturers already basically know how to do this and will be able to comply with Minnesota's reporting structure and give consumers the power they need to make good decisions.
Thank you, Representative Winkler. Is there anybody in the audience who would like to testify? We had Andy Hackman signed up from the toy industry, if you'd like to go first. I don't see him here. Tony Cuelas from the Minnesota Chamber signed up.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tony Cuelas. I'm the Director of Environmental Policy at the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Mr. Hackman is in a cab, I'm sure, that is speeding towards this building, so I will try and be very slow and allow him time to arrive, Madam Chair. But the Chamber of Commerce, as you can imagine, has some concerns about House File 605. Madam Chair, we believe that a state-by-state, chemical-by-chemical approach tends to be very difficult to implement and could result in contradictory and confusing requirements for manufacturers and retailers in the state. As Representative Winkler is alluded to, children's products are heavily regulated by the Consumer Product Safety Improvement Act as well as at the EPA, and hopefully if Mr. Hackman makes it here, he can talk specifically about how toys, and there are other, besides the Consumer Product Safety Improvement Act and the EPA, there are a number of other regulations on the federal level that the toy industry itself has to meet. And also in Minnesota, as Representative Winkler has pointed out, our chemicals of high concern through the Department of Health are what regulate give us regulatory oversight here in the state. I've said this before, Madam Chair, and I'm going to say it again for the record. Last year when we talked about BPA and formaldehyde, I made reference to TSCA, the Toxic Substances Control Act, and the Chamber is very supportive of the review and update of that federal law. I think it's 1976 is when it was in an inception, and it needs to be updated, and we are very supportive of that. And I wanted to get that on the record, Madam Chair. But I think to get through some of the points that I'd just like to make, the bill itself, we think, is very duplicative. There's an extensive amount of data available, and I don't think we need to reinvent the wheel. And you heard the Pollution Control Agency testify specifically on Representative Hansen's microbeads bill that we don't want to go through and take duplicative information that's readily available to the agency and have to go through and, as I said, reinvent the wheel. They wanted to go through and look at the state of New York and do a literature review there. And we think that would be good. And I'll tell you that, as Representative Winkler referenced, Washington State is out there right now. Maine, California, Vermont, Oregon are just some of the states that have readily available information on children's products. That is all gathered under an association called the Interstate Chemical Clearinghouse, or IC2, that's run by the Northeast Waste Management Officials Association. And their goal is to avoid duplication and enhance the efficiency and effectiveness of state, local, tribal initiatives through collaboration and coordination. There's 11 states that are a member of the Interstate Clearinghouse, and Minnesota has two representatives on that clearinghouse through the Pollution Control Agency and the Minnesota Department of Health. They have an extensive website that I was on last night, Madam Chair, and it was pretty impressive because you can go through and search by state, you can go through and search by region, by status of a chemical, by an individual chemical, by policy category, product type, years that they were regulated. There's over 1,000 state and local policies from 50 states starting in 1990 until now. And that data is all in that IC2 website. And I encourage you to visit that if you get a chance. To talk about the confusing part that I think that is confusing to retailers and manufacturers, I just want to draw your attention to the exemption section of the amendment and the bill that Representative Winkler has before you. In Oregon and Washington alone, there are 17 exemptions. There are 13 exemptions in ours. But what I'd like to draw your attention to is we take away one of them. And one of them is a food and beverage exemption. Now, Washington, in their 17, has a number of ones that we include, including batteries, but they also have bicycles, toy steam engines, BB guns, pellet guns, snow sporting equipment, including skis, poles, boots, snowboards and bindings, roller skates, hockey helmets. Oregon also has darts with metallic points. And in a shout-out to my colleagues who represent the slings and catapult industry, they must be doing their jobs in Oregon and Washington because slings and catapults are exempted for this chemical regulation in Oregon and Washington. And to tell you how confusing that would be, so if you sold a hockey helmet in Minnesota, you would have to register it. If you sold a hockey helmet in Oregon or Washington, you wouldn't have to register it. and also in the food and beverage definition that we're taking away that exemption. There is no food and beverage definition in the definition section of this amendment or in that bill. So that leads to some confusion among the industry, and I just wanted to point that out to the committee, Madam Chair. If Mr. Hackman hopefully makes it, he will testify that... He did make it. Perfect. Andy will be able to testify on the cost to the industry and what it costs them alone just in Washington to comply with Washington State, and also what it costs state agencies, regulatory agencies, to perform these data searches that are going on. So we just wanted to point that out, that how costly it is. And then, Madam Chair, the worry is not the worry, but when you talk about chemical regulation, data, exposure, dose are key to when you talk about those chemicals. And I just wanted to point out, we talked about Representative Winkler referenced the state of Washington and their, safe products. Here it is right here. I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Children's Safe Products Act, under their Department of Ecology, under the state of Washington, right on their page where they publish their data, there's a number of bullet points before you go into it, and I'm going to read to you about them and why there's concern about what we do when we go through and talk about data and exposure. And it's the first bullet point is, the presence of a chemical in a children's product does not necessarily mean that the product is harmful to human health or that there is any violation of existing safety standards or laws. The second bullet point says, the report triggers are not on based on health-based values. And the third one is, this data should not be used to determine the safety of individual products. That's right from the Department of Ecology at the state of Washington. And before you go in and look at their data, those are the three bullet points on their website. Madam Chair, I just wanted to make those points to the committee and also let you know that there was, 3 years ago, started by the Environmental Initiative, a stakeholder group that involved the University of Minnesota, the business community, environmental organizations, and state agencies to try and reach a consensus on how to approach chemical regulation in this state. We thought we could reach a consensus. Unfortunately, we didn't, but we were active participants in that, and we would love to see the Environmental Initiative activate that stakeholder group again to address just some of these issues that Representative Winkler has in his amendment. With that, Madam Chair, I'd stand for any questions.
I don't see any questions, but Mr. Hackman is here right now, and so I think it would be good to bring him down. Oh, did you have a question, Representative Hamilton?
Well, I think so, Madam Chair, and maybe the next testifier can help out. You know, Ada is absolutely beautiful, and it's fun to see, children here as well. And so every single one of us want to do the right thing and make sure that, the children are protected. I have two kids of my own, right? We want to do the right thing. Help us understand, whether it's the author or the testifier or the next one, help us understand what a product has to go through in order for it to be cleared and safe and being sold into the market, if you could, please.
I think that would be a good question for the next testifier.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I apologize for being a little bit late this morning, a little bit of weather. But again, my name is Andy Hackman. I'm here on behalf of the Toy Industry Association. We represent all the makers, producers, manufacturers of toys. We have over 700 members and about 125 companies located here in the state of Minnesota. As the National Association for the Toy Industry, we represent across all interests and across all of our product categories. We certainly reflect and support the sort of concept that we want to make safety our number one priority. It truly is what makes a company start in the toy industry is to bring joy and to bring a safe product to children. And we've been able over the last several years to do a lot in terms of making safety mandatory federal law. I'll talk to you a little bit about how toys are regulated at the federal level and then focus in more specifically on House File 605. But the toy industry is regulated by six different federal standards and statutes. And what's unique about us is under the Consumer Product Safety Improvement Act that was passed in 2008, our federal toy safety standard was made mandatory federal law. And what's unique about that is we're able to look at and address new science as it comes on board. I think cadmium was an issue that Minnesota dealt with about 3 years ago. The toy industry was able to create a stringent standard, put that in place in our toy safety standard federally before we had to deal with federal or state regulation, because we have preemptive federal power under our toy safety standard. It's a dynamic process. It relies on medical doctors, experts with the Consumer Product Safety Commission and consumer advocates, and allows us to take into account new information about chemicals and materials and make our standard at the federal level the most stringent as possible. So certainly we echo and have the same goal of this legislation, to make sure that toys are as safe as possible for my daughter who's five and for everybody else's kids. I think some of the challenges with this legislation specifically are how it differs from other states. And how the reporting would be quite unique here if this is implemented as it's proposed and as the proposed amendment looks at this. You heard a lot about the state of Washington. Washington created their Children's Safe Products Act. It was passed in 2008, and reports began to be filed in August of last year. To give you some perspective, they went through about a three-year rulemaking process that industry was at the table. It was a fair process. But there certainly was some significant investment that went into that effort on behalf of industry. It cost us, and not by our own estimates, but by the state's estimates, $27.6 million just in testing costs to comply with the reporting requirements that exist in Washington State. And I think some of the concerns that you heard from Mr. Quillis and that we have with this legislation are significant differences that will require testing to be duplicative at this point. To test for certain chemicals, it's $2,000 to $5,000 per chemical per product. And while companies like Lego and Hasbro and Mattel may be able to absorb some of that cost, it truly is the smaller companies that have three or four employees that are just looking to bring a product to market, that can be quite challenging. So as we look at the legislation, those differences mean a lot. And they mean a lot to our retail partners who say to us, we need to sell a product that's uniform in all 50 states. Show us the testing reports, show us the legal documentation for how the product complies in Washington State, in Minnesota, in California, in Maine, in the states that are taking action on this. So certainly, as you look at this legislation, we hope that you consider some of the differences that are in place, and for us to get to a point where there wouldn't be duplicative costs that quite frankly don't improve safety. I mean, we will do anything we can, spend any resource that we can, if it's improving safety. As Mr. Quillis noted, the Washington State program notes the fact that the mere presence doesn't equate to harm, and that's something that we think the committee should also weigh as you consider this legislation, is are we improving public health? Are we protecting kids with this? And are we offering consumers with truly meaningful information? And we think right now this certainly is a data development exercise, but we want it to be something that supports safety. So because of the differences and because of some significant provisions in here that make this a new program, it would certainly be a first-in-the-nation program if it's linked to the GPC codes as proposed in this legislation. We think that there needs to be some significant work done with the language in addition. And we certainly are willing to work with the committee and work with the chamber and the department to come to some ideas that may accomplish the goal. But certainly, if the state's looking just to have this data, to be quite frank, it exists on the Washington State's Department of Ecology website. You don't necessarily have to pass a new law to have that information. The Washington State Department of Ecology invested a lot of effort and time in this process, and unless we're going to just specifically duplicate that, we're going to have to reinvent the wheel here. So that's, I think, is our interest in this legislation. We certainly, again, want to do everything we can to protect kids, because it, you know, as a dad myself, this is an industry I'm proud to represent, and truly, I couldn't go to bed, you know, and sleep well at night if I felt like this industry wasn't doing the right thing and wasn't thinking every day about ways to protect kids and ways to make that mandatory across all products, not just for the companies that are leaders, but to make sure that everybody's at the same playing field. So, again, I'm sorry to have been a little bit late this morning. Certainly can answer any questions about how the toy industry has been engaged in these efforts in a number of states and the potential impacts of the legislation before you today. So, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for coming. I didn't see any questions. Kelsey Johnson from the grocery manufacturers.
You got Representative Benson.
Okay. I'm sorry, I missed this. Representative, start with you and then Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Winkler, and this kind of relates to both the Mr. Quillis and the toy industry's question. Is there anything in your bill that prohibits the website from having the qualifying cautionary statements that they referenced that are in the Washington?
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, no, it doesn't limit that. And I think it's important to listen carefully to the testimony. Two things that you did not hear either of the testifiers so far say, and that is that, number one, the 9 priority chemicals are safe for children. They didn't say that. And they also didn't say that consumers are able to easily access that information in Minnesota to understand which products that they might buy would have that those chemicals in them. And so you can have a disclaimer on the website, but the idea here is to actually give meaningful information on chemicals that the Department of Health determines may have an impact on children's health and make that information available to consumers in a simple, straightforward manner. And those are two things that this bill does that we would not have without it.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Testifier, I heard you say, I thought, two contradictory things. One, you said that the information is all readily available, and then you also said that this regulation that Representative Winkler is proposing here is onerous. Which is it?
If you are looking for information about chemicals, and the Washington State list includes all the 9 chemicals that have been prioritized here in Minnesota, that information exists in Washington State. You don't have to create a law. You don't have to pass a law to find where those products have been reported in Washington State. The department could simply link to that website. No additional cost, no regulation, no creation of a new program, no new testing that would be resulted from the retail community to say to us, show me that you're complying with Minnesota's law. So that exists. That information exists. If we create a wholly new program that's based off of GPC codes, which is different than how Washington State does it, that's going to result in that second round of testing costs. That $27 million that the industry spent in Washington State will have to be duplicated if it's different here in Minnesota. So that's where perhaps that disconnect is. But again, the information exists in terms of getting an idea of where these materials are located in children's products. And part of the challenge here is, too, is for a company, you're proving the negative. You're testing for 9 chemicals or 66 chemicals or 59 chemicals to explain to the retailer, no, it's not in here. So you're spending that $2,000 to $5,000 per product, per chemical, and you're proving a negative, which I think is some of the frustration here is that it is not improving safety. It's not an investment that improves the safety of children's products. So that's why we're cautious about creating a new program that doesn't improve our product profile, doesn't create new information, but just runs it through a different format, quite frankly.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Well, you know, America's kind of unique, isn't it, in the sense that chemical companies are allowed to introduce chemicals into the environment, whereas, for example, the European Union requires chemical companies to prove there's no harm. Would you support such legislation?
Madam Chair, Representative, we have been an active part of the effort at the federal level to revise TSCA. The REACH program in Europe that you're referencing is a continental program, a large-scale national program at requiring additional data for chemicals. We have been an active member of the efforts to reform TSCA at the federal level. I think you heard it referenced earlier. There's a Senate bill that has 25 bipartisan co-sponsors. It has the broadest bipartisan co-sponsorship of any bill in the U.S. Senate right now. And we've been supporting that effort. And I know, I certainly respect, as we go and deal with this issue from state to state, that states want to be more protective and want to move farther and want, you know, the federal government to set the floor, not the ceiling. So I certainly respect that and understand the interest there. But to create sort of the framework that you're talking about that creates new data and significantly, you know, looks at the safety of chemicals, we support that effort. We've been supporting it at the federal level, and to, you know, to do it right, you need the resources of we would suggest that the resources of EPA, just as the resources of ETCHA in Europe were brought to bear to create that program. So again, just long story to a short question, I apologize, but we've been supportive of that effort through TSCA reform, absolutely.
Madam Chair, just a quick, just wondering if your trade organization is actively lobbying for federal legislation, and you know, if representative of the Chamber of Commerce were here, I would ask the same question, because usually we do not see industrial organizations working hard to increase federal government oversight of their activities. So I'm surprised that the Chamber now is working so hard at the federal level. It's kind of unusual. Usually they're talking about responsibility at the state level. So your organization is kind of an outlier then?
Madam Chair, Representative, the effort at the federal level is unique. I testified in front of the Senate and Senator Barbara Boxer's Committee on Environment Public Works in July in support of the effort that's going on at the federal level right now. There are about 176 trades that are supporting TSCA reform federally. And you have in the House as well a bill draft from House Republicans that give EPA new authority and potential for new resources. I hate to say I've been in this policy area for 13, 14 years now, and it probably is the best opportunity that I've seen ever getting TSCA reform done federally. So certainly, I wouldn't say TIA is an outlier in the effort. There's a strong effort at the federal level. Understand the interest to make sure that Minnesotans are protected as well, and understand why this committee is interested in the issue.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, and you try to become as educated on an issue as you possibly can, right, before you vote and whatnot, and find that balance between, you know, the emotional aspect and the science and the research and aspect as well. And my question, I guess, would be to you, Representative Winkler. You know, the chemicals that we're talking about, if they're deemed unsafe and the Department of Health deem these chemicals as toxic to children, why then are they cleared to be used in toys?
Madam Chair, Representative Hamilton, I think what we're talking about here is the fact that TSCA has not been reformed in the last 14 years. And just because they may be, certain chemicals may be regulated with respect to toys or certain types of toys, it doesn't mean that they're regulated with respect to all products that children may come in contact with. For example, cadmium is regulated in children's jewelry, but it's also in clothing, booster seats, shoes. I mean, there are lots of products that children get access to that are not just toys, and there is no comprehensive federal regulation that addresses these priority chemicals in children's products. The only way you can do that right now is a state-by-state effort, and I'm sure we're all Federalists, Representative Hamilton. You know, we think that if the federal government doesn't lead, it's time for the states to do that. I do recall hearing something about that in recent years, it seems to me that this is a good step forward for Minnesota, and if enough states step up, it may create some burden for the industry in the sense that different states might have different standards. But typically, it's when that happens, when there's a patchwork approach to regulation, that the federal government finally does act and take a comprehensive role in regulating these kinds of things. If the states don't lead after 14 years, it's pretty clear that the federal government isn't ready to get going on that either.
Representative Clark.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to go back to a question that was asked earlier. I didn't really hear an answer to it. Representative Benson asked whether or not you support what's called the precautionary principle, which is it's not the burden of industry to prove that a chemical component is safe before it is used. That's what exists in the European Union. That's what exists in some other countries. My understanding is organizations like yours have usually opposed that. You may want TSCA reform, but I don't know what your idea of TSCA reform is. Do you support, my question is, do you support the precautionary principle, in other words, not using chemicals in your products until they are proven safe, rather than waiting for you know, the public to have the ill effects and then going back?
Madam Chair, Representative, we support looking at exposure and hazard. As we approach safety in our products. So looking at the potential for a child to be exposed to anything and we put in place the most protective standards as possible. The precautionary principle certainly sounds good on paper, but we wouldn't get in our car every day if we were trying to eliminate all risk. We wouldn't be able to pump gas because there's some risk there. So an absolute vision of the precautionary principle where you're trying to eliminate all risks sends you off in very challenging directions. So we truly look at safety as our number one priority, looking at all exposures to all materials in our product categories and the potential hazard from those materials. So that's how we approach safety, and in terms of the precautionary principle, there's a lot of sort of perspective on how that could be applied. But using an absolute precautionary principle approach is not realistic, in our opinion.
Representative Clark.
Madam Chair, sir, I didn't mention anything about absolute. That came from you. I'm asking about whether or not you support the precautionary principle, which is very reasonable. It's not crazy. It's very reasonable that our many of our other countries use. So please don't say that those are my words. I'm talking about the fact, for example, I think it's something like only 200 of the 80,000 synthetic chemicals that we use today have any sort of testing in this country, whereas in other countries, the burden for proving that those 80,000 chemicals that could be used before they can be used, precautionary principle means that you look at the very things that you were mentioning, you look at risk and so on. So we don't have to be extreme. We have to talk about what's already being used in other countries. They seem to have a fairly, you know, healthy economy. I just am asking whether your industry and the associations you belong to support that, and I haven't really heard you say anything except an extreme position. So should I take it that you do not support the precautionary principle as used by the European Union and other countries?
Madam Chair, Representative, in terms of the precautionary principle as used in Europe is applied at a national level and is applied in terms of presenting data to prove safety. We've supported the development of more data. Again, we don't make the chemicals. The toy industry does not make chemicals. We make products. So the more data that's available for us to make smart decisions about our products, we support that. I can't speak on behalf of every chemical and every industry sector in terms of that. But as it pertains to us, we support a national approach that creates more information, and that's why we've been strongly supporting the TOSC effort. In terms of the European Union, we sell products. In the European Union, we rely on data from the EU in terms of developing standards for our industry. The standards between the U.S. And Europe for toys are very much in alignment. So in terms of that perspective, we work within both systems and do so supportively.
Thank you for your testimony. We have Kelsey Johnson from the Grocery Manufacturers Association, who is next.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Kelsey Johnson, and I am Director of State Affairs for the Grocery Manufacturers Association. GMA is the voice of more than 300 leading food, beverage, and consumer product companies that sustain and enhance the quality of life for hundreds of millions of people in the U.S. and around the globe. Founded in 1908, GMA is an active, vocal advocate for its member companies and a trusted source of information about the industry and the products consumers rely on and enjoy every day. The association and its member companies are committed to meeting the needs of consumers through product innovation, responsible business practices, and effective public policy solutions developed through a genuine partnership with policymakers and other stakeholders. In keeping with its founding principles, GMA helps its members produce safe products through a strong, ongoing commitment to scientific research, testing, and evaluation, and to providing consumers with the products, tools, and information they need to achieve a healthy diet and an active lifestyle. The food, beverage, and consumer packaged goods industry in the United States generates sales of $2.1 trillion annually, employs 14 million workers, and contributes $1 trillion in added value to the economy every year. Our concern with House File 605 is that it adds new, unnecessary regulation to the sale of food, beverage, and consumer products that will confuse consumers, likely increase their grocery costs, and limit their choices. The food, beverage, and consumer products industry annually produce 15,000 new products. There are currently 300,000 food, beverage, and consumer products on the market. A large percentage of these products would require review by the MPCA according to this legislation. this legislation will be costly and difficult to comply with. One concern we have is in the amendment is to Section 5, Minnesota Statutes 2012, Statute 116.9405, under the exemptions, the removal from exemption number 9, food and food or beverage packaging, except a container containing baby food or infant formula. No other state includes food or beverages. Our association recognizes the need for changes and has worked diligently to reduce the amount and use of priority chemicals within the food, beverage, and consumer products we manufacture. We also are strong advocates on the federal level for updating the Food Safety Modernization Act and the Toxic Substances Control Act. GMA supports strong federal food safety and chemical management systems. These are national issues, not limited to a single state. When a state does act, GMA supports a scientific, effective, risk-based approach. Thank you for your time and the opportunity to testify on behalf of this very important issue to our industry. I will stand for questions.
Representative Winkler, do you want to, I don't see questions. Would you like to make a final comment before I lay this bill on the table?
Madam Chair, it looks
lay
like
it over for possible inclusion, not on the table. I'm sorry, I didn't see you. You are hard to see. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a question. This kind of relates to the testifier. I guess, why is that removed from this bill, the that section? And maybe Representative Winkler has a response to that, I guess, on section number 9.
Madam Chair, Representative Poppy, I don't know why we would want to not give consumers information about food products, just like anything else. And so I don't know why that would be something that we would be concerned about, frankly. It just seems pretty straightforward. If you're consuming food and beverages and you're consuming anything else, the issues are the same. And again, this testifier did not say that the chemicals were safe and did not say that consumers had information readily available to make informed choices. And that's what this bill does.
Madam Chair. And then a follow-up, just on, which is a little bit different, but with regards to a federal approach, I just wanted to ask Ms. Johnson if there's support for a federal approach on this versus the state approach.
Yeah, we are actively lobbying at the federal level, Madam Chair, members. We are actively lobbying at the federal level for an update to TSCA, the Toxic Substances Control Act, and the Food Safety Modernization Act. We're one of the many associations that's lobbying on the federal level for that. Currently, our products are heavily regulated by the FDA and the EPA. The FDA actually recently did a study and review of BPA and did conclude that BPA was safe and effective in food products. BPA is one of the things that is most highly tested in the industry. It is the it has the largest amount of data available, and that's why we continue to turn to it rather than using a product that we have little to no data or safety or understanding of. We would rather use the product that we have available to us at this time. The industry has taken a stance and moved some of its products away from BPA, and we are continuing to look for other avenues. However, at this point in time, this is the most effective product available on the market.
Madam Chair, I just would like to comment on Representative Poppy's question very quickly, which is it seems shocking that it would take 14 years and no federal update when all these trade groups are so heavily lobbying for a reform of TSCA. You know, call me cynical, but it seems like there must be just a little bit more to that story, or we wouldn't it wouldn't take that long to get there.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And when it comes to health, personal and otherwise, believe me, I take it very, very seriously. Is there anybody the author brought it up about these chemicals, and none of the testifiers weighed in on them whether or not they're safe or not. Is there anybody in the audience or from a department that could speak to that to help us out? That would be my question. Somebody from, you know, the FDA or whatever the case may be. And is there a testifier that could speak to this and answer my question as well? If in the event, and I'm trying to become educated on this, right, and understand it. I mean, if they are dangerous, that we continue to hear. Why are they allowed to be used to, you know, in food containers? Why are they being allowed in children's toys and stuff? Can we hear from somebody from one of the various departments to answer that question for me, please?
It's a little hard for me to listen to that question when there is, I mean, for somebody to come up and tell us that lead is dangerous for children. Lead is dangerous for children.
Oh, Madam Chair, please.
It is.
We're talking about a number of...
Cadmium. There are 9 priority chemicals here, and cadmium was the second one. I think the science is drop dead that it is dangerous for children.
Well, then, Madam Chair, I don't think my question's out of line then. I want to hear from, you know, whether it's the FDA or whomever. And I'm not a scientist. I'm a legislator trying to take a reasonable approach here and seek that balance. And I think it would be extremely helpful to understand, is there a level that is acceptable? And if so, what is that level? And if no level is acceptable, why on God's green earth are they being used? I think it's a legitimate question.
Representative Winkler, do you have somebody that you would like to call to answer that question? I think that is a this is not a regulatory bill, but a notification bill. Do you have somebody who can respond? I don't want to get into the regulation part because this is not a regulation bill. This is a notification bill.
Madam Chair, Representative Hamilton, I don't know if there's somebody here from the Department of Health or not. I can tell you that it's the Department of Health that makes the determination about what chemicals are on the list or not. So there is, and I think, a fairly well-respected state agency in Minnesota who's looking at that based on science, not based on pseudoscience or suspicion. So it is based on science. They have to make that list. And this bill, in its regulatory state, before it became a reporting bill, went through the Health Policy Committee, and a number of those issues were addressed, as well as the consumer issues were addressed in the Commerce Committee, and the industry issues were addressed in the Commerce Committee when it was a regulatory bill, and it still moved through. So to the extent that that's a concern, I think we can go back and try to get some information to you, and maybe we can talk to the members of that committee that passed a far more stringent bill. And I don't think Health is here, but I'm sure they'd be happy to talk to you about their opinions about safety levels.
Representative Hamilton, maybe it would clarify the situation. I mean, this is a finance committee, and as I understand it, this list has already been developed by the Department of Health. This is not a new list you're bringing to us. This is a list that has been developed. Am I correct about that?
Madam Chair, that's correct.
And there are 9 chemicals on that list. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, that is correct. I feel like I'm being deposed.
Well, I think it's just important that, for us to have a sense of what's really about here. This part of the bill has already been taken care of.
And to that point, Madam Chair?
Yeah. This piece of the puzzle has already been put in place. This piece of the puzzle is not going to be taken apart by this committee because the health department's already made that determination. So I think we will limit now questions to going forward in financing, but yes, you may respond. I have Representative McNamara Erickson, and we're going to lay the bill over. So yes, Representative Hamilton.
And thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Winkler, as well. I was a little confused when this bill was brought forward. I didn't understand all the committees that it had been through. So thank you for that clarification as well.
Is there somebody here who would like to say something? I don't know who you
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tom Hogan. I'm the Division Director for Environmental Health with the Health Department, and I'm just really going to confirm what Representative Winkler just kind of described, that through a process of evaluating high-volume chemicals and identifying those that kind of rose to the top as far as most hazardous and the amount of information and data, scientific data that was available as far as potential concerns for children, these nine chemicals were identified through that process. And that's what we're working with at this time. We are also looking at developing a more thorough process for reviewing additional chemicals that may be added to the list in the future. As far as, you know, why these chemicals may be used in current products, that I can't answer.
Okay. Representative McNamara.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is not for either the testifier or Representative Winkler. I don't know what Representative Erickson has, but if it's a question for the testifier, do you want me to go next?
Go ahead.
Madam Chair, I'd like to amend the motion. I'd like to send House File 605 to the General Register and ask for a roll call.
You may do that, but there is a cost to this bill, so it cannot go to the General Register. We are carrying... there is a cost to this bill. It cannot go to the General Register, but there is a roll call. That clerk will take the roll. Chair votes no.
Bouquinis, no. Falk?
No.
McNamara?
Yes.
Anderson?
Yes.
Benson?
No.
Bly?
No.
Clark?
No.
Dill? Absent. Erickson?
No.
Fabian?
Yes.
Freiberg?
No.
Hackbarth? Excused. Hamilton?
Yes.
Hansen?
No.
Kahn?
No.
Keel?
Yes.
Poppy?
No.
Torkelson?
Yes.
Ward?
No.
What it does is it adds this evaluation, because that's the step
of their there being 11 nays and 6 ayes, the motion does not carry. Representative Erickson, you have the last.
No
comments?
Madam Chair?
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you tell me how much the appropriation is in this bill that your people all voted no on? You voted no to send House File 605 to the General Register because I think you said there's an appropriation in it. How much is the appropriation in the bill, Representative Winkler?
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, the fiscal note is currently being prepared. Indeed, PCA, in informal conversation, suggests the number is between $300,000 and $400,000.
Representative Winkler, I'm not a lawyer, Madam Chair. I'm not. I'm a landscaper. The appropriation audience is zero. There is no appropriation in this bill. It is zero. The Democrats unanimously voted to not move this bill forward. Thank you, Representative Winkler. We know the priorities. It's all about partisan politics and not about policy. Welcome to the committee. Thank you, Madam Chair.
I think for clarification to the record, we do have a specific number that we are carrying that is 335. And we have tails numbers, and as this amendment is made to the omnibus bill, we will have very specific numbers that will pay for it, and there is room for those numbers. With that, the chair will lay this over for possible inclusion. Representative Winkler, we thank you for coming, and we're going to now substitute.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
But then this.
Right.
Members, this is the omnibus bill that I am going to move for your consideration. It is House File 3158, and we posted it earlier as the vehicle for moving this bill, the omnibus bill, through to Ways and Means. So I'm going to move House File 3158 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means, and the amendment is in your packet, and I will go over it very quickly for you.
Okay, Representative Wagenius moves that House File 3158 be referred to Ways and Means Committee.
Okay,
that motion is before us.
There are two articles in the bill, and the Article 1 shows that the total...
Representative Wagenius, would you like to move the DE1 amendment to get the bill in the shape?
Oh, yes, thank you. There is a technical amendment.
Well, we first have to adopt the DE1 amendment, then we can move to the technical. But
fine.
So, Representative Wagenius moves the DE1 amendment to House File 3158. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Wagenius to the technical amendment.
The technical amendment is just that, and I would move it.
Thank you, members. I believe that is coded the A-10 amendment. Representative Wagenius moves the A-10 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The amendment, the motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Wagenius, to the bill as you prefer it.
Thank you. You will see on the first page the total of the dollars that are proposed to be expended in this amendment that we have adopted. If you would go to the page 2, you will see to the Department of Agriculture. This is something we've already voted on, but for ease of administration, I put it in the bill. It's the money to Second Harvest Heartland. In addition, on line 2.28, there is a $100,000 to compensate experts evaluating the deaf pollinators, and we heard that bill from Representative Hansen. 310 in 2015 is to administer the dog and cat licensing inspection program. Representative Hamilton, as far as we adopted exactly what came from committee. There is no change here in the dollar or in the wording. The wording we'll see later. You'll see on the next page that we have, we're carrying a base in fiscal year 2016 and a base in 2015. Next to the Pollution Control Agency are two things. One is $1,000 to compile information on plastic microbeads and their potential impact on aquatic ecosystems and human health. That's $1,000. That was brought to you by Representative Hansen. Next is $7 million for the purposes, and we'll go over it later. These are the SCORE dollars, and if you'll remember the bill that Representative Hornstein brought to you and we discussed, he was carrying $22 million to fully take the money out of the general fund. Obviously, we didn't have that much money. We have $7 million and $7 million in the base going forward, and the way we are expending that is that for the metropolitan counties, the seven-county metro area, there are, it will be 50% of the money will be going to composting and the rest to meet the 75 standard. And for going to the rest of the state, it will go just as the money has always gone. There is no change. The formula will be the formula. In the next part is 4.4. We're sending money to Parks and Trails for a one-time appropriation, and that is basically to do deferred maintenance. Of course, we've had trouble with that in Parks and Trails. We've discussed that on occasion in this committee. this is not the kind of deferred maintenance we talk about when we are doing bonding bills. It's more like the toilet cracked and you have to replace the toilet, or a branch fell onto a roof and you're not replacing the roof for the whole, you're not redoing the whole roof, but you're replacing a half dozen shingles. It's a kind of thing that for those of us on the committee who are homeowners, we face all the time. There is additional money going to parks and trails from the lottery and lieu account. There was a substantial amount of money there. This still leaves some money on the bottom line in for parks and trails. You'll see down on line 4.424, we're doing the similar thing in the metropolitan area where there's quite a bit of money on the bottom line. Back up to 4.19 is from the Game and Fish Fund for trap shooting sports facility grants, brought to you by Representative Dill. On line 4.24 is the money for the University of Minnesota for the invasive terrestrial plants center, brought to you by Representative Falk. There are three parts of money to fund that. 5.1 from the general fund, $490,000 is from the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund. This was money left on the bottom line and not spent this year by the trust in the that bill that is now on the House floor. And then $970,000 is from the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund. This is a transfer, so it's not included in the total up at the top. It is a transfer from dollars that were sent back from Bowser with a letter to the folks at LCCMR saying this was money they would not be spending. So now we're in Article 2, and this is the language that goes along with the appropriations. The language starting on page 6 is for dog and cat bill that we referenced before. There is no change in the language as that came to us from Representative Poppy's committee. Pollinator bill from Representative Hansen is on lines, starts on line 6.14, and that continues on page 10. That's where we have Representative Dill's bill, 10.22. The recycling is on 10.30, and if you would look at the language where we changed it from Representative Kornstein's bill, you will look on lines 13.18, and that's how we distribute the money that I've already described to you. Back on page 14.22, Representative Hamilton is the rest of the dog and cat bill. That continues then. We've all seen this this language. It continues to down to page 22. When we have on page 22.21, we have Representative Benson's bill on school trust director. This is the exact language that Representative Benson gave to us. And then we go back again to line 3. There's a, you know how bills are done. There's some, we're back to some B language. But then we are on line 23.21, and this is the terrestrial plants and pest center that Representative Falk brought to you. And with that, that is the bill, and I'm ready for questions or amendments.
Thank you, Representative Wagenius. Seeing no questions, being that we've gone through all of these bills already, we've taken public testimony on them. Representative Wagenius, would you like to go to your First Amendment?
The First Amendment is the, and I'm not sure I have it up here with me. Let me check.
I believe it's the A1 Amendment, Representative Wagenius.
The A1 Amendment, yes.
Representative Wagenius moves the A1 Amendment.
And this is for the Toxic Free Kids Act, and you will see online, we certainly heard the testimony, but do a look on line 1.4, and you will see the costs, and there is room in our spreadsheet for those costs. There were tails, and there is room in our tails budget for the tails. And I would move this amendment.
Thank you, Representative Wagenius. Discussion to the A1 amendment. Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed say no.
No.
Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Let's see. Representative Hansen, do you have the A2 amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hansen moves the A2 amendment. Representative Hansen, to your amendment.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the A2 amendment is relating. It's a $50,000 study for the Lake Emily Dam in Crow Wing County to look at water clarity and water levels. This is an issue where some boards have been placed in the dam, a lot of public interest and concern, so trying to apply some science looking at the effects of the dam.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Representative Wagenius, what's your pleasure with the A2 amendment?
Support the A2 amendment.
Thank you, Representative Wagenius. Discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Let's see here. Representative Wagenius, do you have the A4 amendment?
I do have the A4 amendment. This is a from the DNR. We are perhaps going to be developing the Fort Snelling Upper Bluff in the bonding bill, and they're just clarifying some language that says interest earned on the money in the account accrues to the account. And this would be for the Upper Bluffs.
Representative Wagenius moves the A4 amendment. Discussion of the A4 amendment. Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Hansen, do you have the A8 amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd move the A8 amendment.
Representative Hansen moves the A8 amendment. Representative Hansen, to your amendment.
Mr. Chair and members, the A8 amendment is relating to a study to look at recovering the historical native population of bobwhite quail. This has gone through the policy committee and generated a $9,000, I want to make sure it's $9,000 fiscal note. I think this is a good plan and has had good support.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Representative Wagenius, what's your pleasure with the amendment?
Members, I support the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Wagenius. Seeing no discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Representative Hansen, do you have the A7 amendment?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chair. I'd move the A7 amendment.
Representative Hansen moves the A7 amendment. Representative Hansen, to your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The A7 amendment, we had in an original version of the spreadsheet, we had been carrying $65,000 in the tails for a bill that is not included. What this amendment does is applies the $65,000 in the tails to the pollinator response team of experts.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Representative Wagenius, what's your pleasure with the amendment?
I believe we should adopt this amendment.
Thank you, Representative Wagenius. Discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say nay. The motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Members, the page is handing out the A13 amendment. Is anybody here going to offer the A13 amendment? Representative McNamara, to your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm offering the A13 amendment.
Representative McNamara moves the A13 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This would direct the previous RIM appropriation to stay in RIM, and the Terrestrial Invasive Species Center is just getting off the ground, and we're still looking to see how that'll be. And there's over $5 million appropriated in this bill for that center. So I would ask that this money stay in RIM. And, Mr. Chair, I'd ask for a roll call.
Representative McNamara requests a roll call. Representative Wagenius, to the amendment. What's your comment?
My first comment, members, would be I didn't know that this was Representative McNamara's amendment, but I would ask members to look at the date and the time that this amendment was drafted. It was drafted yesterday at 2 p.m., several hours before Representative McNamara went onto the floor and said he had no notice of the DE3 amendment, this bill, or that it had been posted.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I didn't want to have the discussion again, but I'm more than welcome to. I think there's a number of students here that will be very interested in a little lesson today. Welcome and glad you're here. To go back, we were told last Thursday in this committee by Chair Wagenius that the bill would be worked on and presented to us possibly late Friday night, but more likely we would receive it sometime on Saturday, and I asked the question as late as Saturday night, and she said that's a possibility. So if you can imagine, when I didn't receive the bill anytime over the weekend, I was very surprised. I actually cleared my emails down to I only had about 8 emails left in my email box. I was very proud. My inbox was very low. Unfortunately, never did I get the bill over the weekend. It was not sent to the Republican members. It was sent to all the Democrat members, and it was sent to something called listserv. Now, you are probably in 10th grade, maybe 11th. You probably would know how to go to a listserv, but it would help if somebody told you you needed to go to the listserv to get the bill. So I came when I found out, when I was asked a question about the bill, I said, well, I haven't got the bill yet. And they said, oh, yeah, you did. It's been out since Friday night. I said, oh, really? So I went and talked to the committee administrator, and he acknowledged, oh, we sent it to the listserv and the Democrat members on the committee, but not the Republican members on the committee. At 11:30, I found that out. So I went down to the committee administrator and said, you know, it's 12:30 now. Maybe you could figure this out. He never sent us the bill yet. So I went up to Chair Wagenius' office. She was in an important meeting. So I let her legislative assistant know, you should probably let Chair Wagenius know you haven't sent the bills to us yet.
Representative McNamara.
So then I
didn't receive a copy either, so we're not going to go and rehash all the details. It
Mr.
serves
Chair,
no purpose.
You're interrupting me.
I know I am, because we're not going to go on a 10-minute soliloquy. We're going to continue to do work.
I didn't bring it up, Mr. Chair.
I didn't either, but I'm going to make sure that we continue to work.
Personal.
I didn't receive the email either. Didn't either, but I'm going to make sure that we continue to work.
Personal.
I didn't receive the email either, so we were directed, like everybody else, to look at the website. So you didn't get an email. I didn't get an email. You know what? It's in the past. It doesn't matter at this point. We're going forward. We're going to get our work done.
I didn't bring it up, Mr. Chair.
I didn't either. So let's go and be adults and leave it at that. Representative Wagenius, to the amendment.
I did bring it up, and Representative McNamara, I think it is something that we will have to discuss again on the floor, since but we will do that later.
I think it's most important for us to focus on the work at hand. Let's get to the amendment. Representative Wagenius,
okay.
to the amendment.
In this amendment, first of all, members, I think Representative McNamara, you were one that said we need to fund the terrestrial invasive species to the extent we possibly can on the record, and that's what we tried to do in this bill. And that's number one. Number two, there will be bonding money for RIM in our bonding bill. I think it's at $20 million. Representative Hansen probably knows that number. So, members, in this case, where we have a new opportunity to create a terrestrial invasive plant and pest center at the University of Minnesota, which will be cutting edge. I handed out this morning, I got an email from from Bonnie Harper, who is one of the members of LCCMR. She was excited about this proposal, and I put that on your desks. So with that, members, I would ask you to vote no.
Roll call being requested. The clerk will call the roll.
Wagenius?
No.
Falk?
No.
McNamara?
Yes.
Anderson?
Yes.
Benson?
No.
Bly?
No.
Park?
No.
Dill?
Yes.
Erickson?
No.
Fabian?
Yes.
Freiberg?
No.
Hackforth? Excuse. Hamilton?
Yes.
Hansen?
No.
Kahn?
No.
Keel?
Yes.
Poppy?
No.
Torkelson?
Yes.
Ward?
No.
There being 7 ayes and 11 nays, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. We have the A14 amendment. Mr. Who offers the A14 amendment?
Mr. Chair.
Fabian, is that yours?
No, it is not my amendment. It's been brought to my attention that the audio is not going out.
Well, can the pages check on that, please? We've been informed that it's on, but we're not certain why. Is it? Well, they're going to check. Thank you. We've been informed that everything's running on our end, so there may be another technical issue on the other end. They're going to check with public info. We have the A14 amendment. Who offers the A14 amendment?
Mr. Chair, I am offering the A14 amendment. I have some handouts.
Representative Torkelson offers the A14 amendment.
And I request a roll call, Mr. Chair.
Representative Torkelson has handouts.
I request a roll call, Mr. Chair.
Understood. Representative Torkelson requests a roll call.
I don't have a copy.
Can I get we get a copy to Representative Wagenius and then also to the rest of the committee. Representative Benson, do you have a question?
I do not have a copy either.
Yeah, they are being distributed. Actually, we've been informed that this is the first one that was handed out. You should have a copy of the A14 amendment. There, the supplementary information provided by Representative Torkelson is being handed out right now. Representative Torkelson, while the handouts are being distributed, would you like to walk us through the amendment?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. The A14 amendment deals with a project in Benton County that, if you've gotten your handout and you look on the first page, it deals with increasing irrigation efficiency, improving soil health, and maintaining critical stream flow, issues that we have been dealing with in this committee and that DNR is dealing with in relation to groundwater management areas and the irrigation issue. This project was heard by the LCCMR committee, did not make the first cut, and was brought up for reconsideration and failed by one vote. Since that time, I have been in contact with the proposers of the project. The original price tag on the project was $490,000. They've reduced the cost down to $397,000, and removed a couple of objectionable items in the project. The reason I just found out yesterday there was a lot more money on the bottom line than I thought. I thought there was only $490,000 due to a project that was canceled by the Nature Conservancy. You see in today's proposed bill that there's some more funds there. I feel this is a very timely project, an important project, and you will note that the letter from the DNR has supported this project all along, and I think it's a proper use of LCCMR funds. It's been heard by the committee, unlike the Terrestrial Invasive Species Project, which has not been heard by the LCCMR committee.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson. Representative Wagenius, do the amendment.
Yes, members. I trust you all have noted the time that this was submitted, but I'm going to speak against this because this, while it may be wonderful for this one community, it is taking money away from the terrestrial plant and invasive species dollars that will benefit everyone in the state. If you will remember the way that bill was, the language is in here, and it is for terrestrial species, pests, and pathogens for forests, prairies, wetlands, and the agriculture community. So it has broad reach, and I would hope that we would vote this amendment down, because it is very narrow for one community, and while it does benefit this community, the money would be taken from something that will benefit the state and all members of the state.
Thank you, Representative Wagenius. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Difference of opinion, I guess. We have really highlighted this session on the pollinators, on irrigation, water quality, sustainability. And this amendment certainly fits the focus of the committee, and I would strongly support this amendment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm recognizing the time that it was on the amendment, Mr. Chair, and I ask that I'm allowed to speak to that since the author did bring it up. And Mr. Chair, and to the author of the bill, the wonderful staff that we do have around here, they did go on listserv, and they did what we directed them to do to address some of our concerns. They do not have the ability to see on listserv which members actually received it or were included in the emails as well. So I hope that we're not criticizing the wonderful people that we have around here in any way, shape, or form, because they do a great job. And to Representative McNamara's concerns, they're legit. And, you know, I just hope that we can recognize that and in the future make sure that everybody's included on that email as well so that we can address the good work before us. Thank you.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. First, to the current point, you know, every meeting and every bill we've heard before this committee has been sent to me in an email. I depend on that email, especially when I'm not at the legislature, when I'm at home roaming around visiting with my constituents and trying to see if my family still recognizes me or not. I depend on my email for notification of important bills that come to this committee, and those emails were not sent out. And that is the point here. And
Representative Torkelson, it was announced that it would be on the website. We all heard that multiple times. We can continue to rehash the grievances that some people have about not being sent an email or, you know, like everybody was told to check the website. That was stated multiple times.
Mr. Chair, I'm just pointing out that every other meeting and every other bill was sent to me on an email, and that's my only point. Thank you.
And Representative Torkelson, it was stated many times that it would be on the website. We have an amendment before us. Representative Torkelson, it is your amendment. Would you like the final word on the amendment before we vote?
I would like to speak to the amendment, Mr.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson.
First, to the author. So increasing irrigation efficiency, improving soil health, and maintaining stream flow are only important to this one small area? Is that what you're trying to point out, Chair Wagenius?
Representative Wagenius and members, we are quickly approaching the end of our time here, so we will be voting on this before we are done. Representative Wagenius.
This community has asked for dollars to help with a project in this community. It may be a worthy project. I am not going to get into that. The question here is, should this money be spent for one local community, which LCCM, we won't even get into that, or should it be spent for something that will benefit many, many, many Minnesotans, because we're all concerned about a terrestrial invasive species, pests, and pathogens. And the bill that this would take money from is actually addressing invasive species that go into forests, invasive species that go into wetlands, invasive species that go into prairies, and invasive species that go onto agricultural land. Similarly with pests, similarly with pathogens, the broad application, I think, overwhelms this particular project. And so, members, I would ask you to vote no.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Torkelson, I know I've got a few other people on the list. We're going to get voted on this here in the next few minutes, so please make it as brief as possible. Representative Torkelson.
Mr. Chair, it's my understanding we're coming back this evening, and if this conversation needs to continue, I'd appreciate having adequate time to consider this project.
Representative Torkelson, if you'd like to withdraw the amendment now, we can vote on it later, and we'll just recess until the evening, if that's...
I withdraw the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson. Members, thank you. We've got a lot of work done here. We will be coming back tonight at 6 p.m., 400 North. It's a small room, unfortunately. If something else becomes available, we'll let you know by email as quickly as possible. Members, with that, we are in recess. We'll resume the meeting of the Environment, Natural Resources, Agriculture, Finance Committee. Representative Wagenius, we're still back on your, we'll continue with your bill. Representative Torkelson, you had the amendment before we left. We'll take that up again. Representative Torkelson, you'd like to offer, I believe it is the A14 amendment.
Thank you. I'd like to offer that amendment and ask for a roll call vote.
Roll call requested.
Thank you. If we continue this morning's discussion, before I call up the project proposer, I'd like to point out the letter from the DNR that was handed out earlier and just highlight a few items in there. This letter is from the commissioner of DNR strongly supporting the project. He notes that land management practices in watersheds surrounding trout streams are often the focal point for the department's management efforts. He outlines three specific connections with his plan that this project addresses: enhancing lake, river, aquifer, and aquatic habitat work, engaging the agricultural industry in conservation partnerships, and ensuring the adoption of best science and management practices. All important goals for the DNR and of statewide significance. At this point, I would like to call Gary Machi, the manager of the Benton County Soil and Water Conservation District, forward.
Thank you. Representative Torkelson, Representative Wagenius, while Mr. Machi's coming down.
While he's coming forward, was that letter from the commissioner written comparing this proposal with the proposal from which you are taking money, or just talking about it in general?
The letter is written to Mr. Machi, so it's in relation to this specific project.
And not in relationship to taking it from this particular source of funding. You may sit down.
Oh, no, it's to the...
Representative Torkelson.
I am pleased to write this letter on support on behalf of the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources regarding the 2014 LCCMR proposal.
Thank you.
So it's directly to the LCCMR.
Thank you.
Mr. Amati, hopefully I said your name correctly, but please introduce yourself, your affiliation for the record.
Yeah, my name is Jerry Machi. I am the district manager for the Benton County Soil and Water Conservation District. And I wrote this proposal that's in front of you today.
Thank you. Do you have any comments you'd like to offer?
Yeah, I would. The title of this project is really important. It's titled, and I'm assuming everybody has a copy or has seen a copy in advance, Restoring Groundwater and Trout Habitat Through Irrigation Efficiencies. The title would lend readers to believe that this project is just about working on groundwater resources and trout habitat in Little Rock Creek in central Minnesota, and it certainly will aid in the restoration of trout in Little Rock Creek, no doubt. One thing, though, I would say is that might not be apparent in how this was written up is this is really a project of statewide significance, without a doubt. Activity 2 in the proposal, and I'll just read it for you, it's the Conservation Irrigation Decision Support System, acronym is CIDSS. And a decision support system will be developed that provides daily information on condition-appropriate conservation irrigation methods. And then towards the end it also goes on to say local producers will develop the decision point criteria for implementing the specific conservation measures. And I would just like to expand a little bit on those two sentences there to maybe fully explain how this is really a statewide significant project. What we'll be doing is we'll be working with a consultant to develop some software that irrigators in our area can use to help make very important decisions when we reach sustainability thresholds. What the software will do is it will take real-time data based on stream flow and dissolved oxygen levels in the stream, and it will identify when we're reaching levels that are threatening to trout. And we identify that as sort of the sustainability levels. On a Minnesota-wide standpoint, you can think of that in other areas of the state, like I know in working with the DNR, our area manager, they're dealing with the Bonanza Valley over in Stearns and other counties, and their thresholds may be groundwater levels as opposed to the stream level. And there's concerns over there, for instance, they may have groundwater levels drop 70, 80 feet is not that uncommon. And they reach thresholds where interference with domestic wells for consumptive use are issues. So the software would be applicable and usable in other areas of the state in identifying those sustainable thresholds. And the other part is setting up our committees, the local users of the water resource. They will self-define what conservation measures they choose to put in place to conserve water during when we reach those critical thresholds. And again, if I were to take this project and look at how it's applicable to other parts of the state, if you look at limited groundwater resources, maybe something closer to the Twin Cities area like White Bear Lake and the aquifer underneath White Bear Lake, you know, the cities could look at those levels and ask people to maybe not water their lawns or water at night and try to conserve water resources on a voluntary basis in an aid to avoid the situation where you have to have watering bans in place. So it's a tool that can be used in all different parts of Minnesota. It allows the users to sort of self-promote conservation activities with the awareness of that they're reaching those sustainability thresholds.
Thank you, Mr. Machi. Representative Wagenius?
I understand you are applying for another LCCMR grant.
Mr. Machi?
For fiscal year 2015? That is my intention, that's correct. I have not submitted any application yet.
Thank you, Mr. Machi. Representative Hansen?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think it's important, Representative Torkelson, you had referenced the letter just for for the committee to know that the date on the letter is August 21st, 2013. So it appears the letter was submitted as part of the application for the last round of LCCMR, which, if I remember from this morning, this was an application, but it did not get selected. Is that correct?
Mr. Macchi.
Yes, that is correct.
Representative Hand, you done?
I think we're similar to kind of the issue that happened last year with Outdoor Heritage, where there were proposals that didn't make the cut, but there were attempts to put them in, and then those didn't work. And so then the proposals went back to the recommending entity and made the pitch again, and they were included. So I think that's the question before us here is, do we fund this, or do we let it go back to the process?
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And to that point, this project missed the cut by one vote. LCCMR is different than Lessard Sam's and the other legacy funds in that every dollar that's available can be spent in a given year. Leaving money on the bottom line is just letting money sit there doing nothing until the next year. So utilizing these funds currently certainly is of greater benefit because we get the project off the ground. And as far as the letter goes, I didn't receive notification that this could be an amendment to a bill because I didn't see the bill until yesterday morning.
Thank you. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to ask members to vote against it, not because we should be voting against the project, but because the money is coming from the money that is being dedicated in this bill to the terrestrial invasive species and pest center at the University of Minnesota, which will be doing work that will be benefiting all of Minnesotans who are interested in forests, in wetlands, in prairies, and in agriculture, where some of the specific things are going to be done on agricultural weeds. So with that, I would ask for a no vote and hope that this project does submit to the LCCMR for the next round.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wagenius, could you tell me what work will not be done at the terrestrial center if this $397,000 doesn't go there that Representative Torkelson is trying to fund out of LCCMR? What work in the plan of the terrestrial center won't happen in the next year if this money doesn't go there?
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. Members, if you would look at it would be in the beginning of this bill. It talks about, and I'm going to find the page in a second, for the money. And if you will look at line 5.12 to 5.18, this is a one-time appropriation, and the thing that's going, the money is for a director, graduate students, and necessary supplies. Well, a graduate student in this bill, or that we are getting with this bill, is about $45,000 a year. So that's how many graduate students, you can divide that in and figure out how many graduate students working on various projects we will not have if your amendment is adopted.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, but Representative Wagenius, that wasn't my question, but to your point, the university laid out, I believe it was 10 graduate students in one area, and five might have been, one were graduates and some might have been postdocs. But there's no way it came anywhere close to 5.1 million, more or less 6.3. I'm wondering, you're right, they said they were going to do some graduate students, but that was a small percentage of this total funding. what's not going to get done if this $397,000 is spent in Benton County?
Representative Wagenius.
One of the things that, as you would want to look on line 5.30, this money is available, and on 5.18 and on 5.11, the money is available until June 30th, 2025. You asked us, we will give them the money, but they are going to stretch it out over 10 years so that when you hire a graduate student, you are not hiring them for 1 year. They are coming in for a project that, say if it's a PhD student, might take 5, 6, 7 years. Postdocs usually don't stay around that long. But that is how you asked us to handle the money, and that is what we're doing.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the additional explanation, Representative Wagenius, but as you and I know, there'll be an LCCMR bill every year, really forever, because the way it's set up, different than Lasard Sam's, it goes into a trust account that continues to grow and grow and grow, and even if the lottery ends and we don't renew it whenever it runs out, the trust fund will continue to grow because it grows faster than 5% on an annual basis. So the reality, if I hear you right, I don't hear there's any need to have all this money here because you don't plan on spending some of it for 11 more years. And so the future LCCMR could easily fund this, and very appropriately, and I hope they do. I'm a big backer of this invasive terrestrial plants, and I'm glad that Representative Falk, Chair Falk, has done this. This is a fantastic thing. I believe Representative Hamilton was very excited to be part of this. This is really important. But the reality, members, there's not a plan to spend all this money right now. We need to stand up and do the right thing. We have some serious issues with water appropriation. Representative Torkelson brought forward a bill that very close came within one vote, if I remember right, hearing from LCCMR to be funded. This didn't get any votes to be funded in LCCMR, where Representative Wagenius wants to put the money. It got zero votes. So you can vote for something that got 7 of 12, or you can vote for something that got 0 of 12. I would suggest we go with the 7 of 12 and do something very important for this water appropriation issue. Thank you, Mr.
Representative Wagenius.
There was no vote in LCCMR on a terrestrial invasive species proposal. In fact, there was no proposal. So to characterize it that way, I think, is unfair. Let's go back to our original thinking, and this was in the aquatic invasive, just as it is in the terrestrial. You do not hire a graduate student and say, we have money for you for 1 year. We say to them, we will get you on a track. We want you to study something for 5, 6, 7 years, the time it will take to get your PhD. That's what the university asked us for, and that is what Representative Falk's bill provides.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wagenius, part of this spending proposal is $970,000 from the Environmental and Natural Resources Trust Fund. When did you find out that that money was available?
Representative Wagenius.
They asked our fiscal analyst to check on that fairly recently, and we found that the money was available.
Representative Torkelson. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if that money had not been available, then this proposal would not be part of your bill? Is that, so I interpret it that way?
I was hoping Wagenius. This money would be available. We had known that it was a possibility for quite some time, but the finality was about a week ago, I think.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You didn't answer my question, Representative. If this money had not been available, would you have canceled this project?
Absolutely not.
So, Representative Wagenius, without the 970, you would have the project going forward, but without the 378, somehow you cannot allow this project to go forward? Is that what you're saying?
I don't believe that was stated, but Representative Wagenius, please respond.
You have to look at the bill as a whole, and it might have been something else that didn't get funded in the way it is being funded. So you can't, making that assertion is inaccurate.
Representative Torkelson.
So to get this straight, you're asking us to approve funding for a project that has never been heard by LCCMR has had no votes, no, not even any consideration, and you're denying, asking your colleagues to deny a project that has been fully vetted by the LCCMR committee and failed by only one vote.
It failed.
Representative Wagenius, I guess, Mr. Maki, if I can ask you a question, are you planning to reapply for the next round of funding?
That is my intention, it is.
Thank you, Mr. Maki. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I was just going to follow up. Representative McNamara did, clarify it. You know, the project that you carried, Mr. Chair, I was a strong supporter of that, and I think it's a great project. And Representative Torkelson's point here as well, you know, think about it. I'd like to say I want it all. And, you take a look at this project, and this is for all the members here. You take a look at the proposal that's before us, and you talk about soil health and stream health and crop production. This is precisely what we've been talking about all year. And so this is a fantastic project. And I'm thinking that with the explanation that Chair Wagenius just talked about, with that $970,000, we were going to find that money in this bill somewhere. This project was going to go through. And so now we're looking at $397,000. We should be able to find those dollars as well to support this project. And so I hope that we can support this amendment. And, Madam Chair, with what you said about that $970,000, you know, you were determined, and, you know, probably rightfully so, right? You're determined to find those dollars somewhere. Well, I think we can do the same thing to get this project. It's a critical project, and it's one that all of us have been talking about with stream health, soil health, and crop production.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, we've heard volumes of talk in the legislature this year about, the irrigation and streams and water and trout and nitrates and all that sort of stuff. I was a strong supporter of this in the LCCMR. I think that the carryover effect of what they're doing in Benton County has the ability to be able to be a base work, baseline information that's going to be valuable all across the state. And to me, it seems like we're passing up a golden opportunity to address some of the issues that we've heard so much about. And as a member of LCCMR, I guess I'm disturbed and disappointed that the $1.5 million roughly that we're taking off the bottom line from LCCMR has not come through our committee. I think it's inappropriate. Why? I mean, if this is the way we're going to conduct business around here, why don't we just have an amendment in your bill to get rid of the LCCMR Citizens Committee and just let the legislature do all this work? I've talked before about how we should be doing business around here. There are some ground rules that have been laid, and this goes outside of those ground rules, and quite frankly, I think it's inappropriate, and I support Representative Torkelson's amendment, and I hope that the rest of you will, too. This is, I hope that Minnesota's watching tonight. I really do. I hope they're listening, because this is not the way we should be going about doing business in the great state of Minnesota.
Representative Wagenius.
I certainly hope Minnesotans are watching, too, because Minnesotans would understand that if we didn't appropriate this money in this bill, it would go back into the trust fund and would not be used this year in both cases.
Thank you, Representative Wagenius. The clerk will call the roll.
Wagenius?
No.
Paul?
No.
McNamara?
Yes.
Anderson?
Yes.
Benson?
No.
Lai?
No.
Clark?
No.
Dill?
Yep.
Erickson?
No.
Fabian?
Yes.
Freiberg?
No.
Hackforth?
Aye.
Hamilton?
Yes.
Hansen?
No.
Kahn? Absent. Keel?
Yes.
Poppy?
No.
Torkelson?
Yes.
Ward?
No. There being 8 ayes, 10 nays, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. We have the A-17 amendment. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A-17 amendment is a bill that was introduced relating to a study relating to narrowleaf and hybrid cattail. Representative Benson had a bill last year. There was Representative Hornstein had a bill this year. I think we're going to see bill after bill directing the DNR to issue permits, and rather than dealing with this on a case-by-case basis, I'm requesting a study from the Department of Natural Resources, and the $3,000 was the fiscal note.
Representative Hansen moves the A-17 amendment. Representative Wagenius to the A-17 amendment.
I support the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Wagenius.
Other members do too.
Representative McNamara, discussion to the amendment.
I do, Mr. Chair. I'd like to know if the DNR supports taking $3,000 out of the Game and Fish Fund for this.
Let's see here. Who from the DNR would like to come down and speak to this? We see Mr. Meyer approaching the witness stand. Welcome, Mr. Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. We have been working with the author on this amendment. We do support the appropriation. The aquatic plant management program that deals with the cattails is funded out of the Game and Fish Fund dollars. I think, as we've talked about in this committee, aquatic plant management fees are deposited in there as well, so this is an appropriate source for the funding.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, can you explain that? How does that work? You said aquatic plant management, the fees go into the Game and Fish account. Are they in a dedicated part of that account?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, I believe they're just deposited into the Game and Fish Fund. I can check on that for you. Mr. Hagmeyer might have that information. But most of the activity, this report will be written by staff within the Fish and Wildlife Division. So it is appropriate for them to be funded out of the Game and Fish Fund. Aquatic plant management fees are also, aquatic plant management activities are funded with Game and Fish Fund dollars, as well as water rec dollars and aquatic plant management fees. So there's three sources of funding, so this is an appropriate source of those funding.
Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Meyer, we did a bill in one area, I think it was out in Plymouth or somewhere last year, to do this, and didn't we, and I remember Representative Hornstein's bill this year was to do it on some park board property on one of the chain of lakes in Minneapolis. It was actually to circumnavigate a number of current environmental laws, and they were going to tear out the cover along the shore of these ponds. And Representative Hansen is trying to stop this derogation that would be really bad, and I really appreciate that. But I'm surprised that it's appropriate to come out of Game and Fish when so I'm trying to understand that. So you support this because this is an appropriate spot, and this is where funds that would be paid by these people that were getting a permit would pay into that?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, yes. And what you're referring to is a Shavers Lake bill that Representative Benson had last year. We are working with those individuals, and between that position and also the Representative Horstein bill dealing with Loring Park, it's come to our attention that we're applying aquatic plant management rules to what are really stormwater catch basins. That and these curly, the hybrid cattails are choking these basins out. So there's a number of issues we need to unravel. One of them being the relationship between these stormwater catch basins, stormwater management permits that these cities are required to have, and also the aquatic plant management rules. This is work we were considering doing, given the testimony in this committee on the Loring Lake bill. And Representative Hansen asked us about this approach, and we thought it would be a wise idea to try to deal with this in a more general way rather than lake by lake or basin by basin by basin, I should say.
Thank you. Representative McNamara.
One final one, and maybe Representative Hansen, I missed this, but was this either, it's either a question for you or the department, was $3,000 the anticipated cost to do this study? He's not
Mr.
in the
Chair,
so thank
yes.
you.
Representative Hackbarth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hansen, what happened to the language that Representative Hornstein had then? Is that still included somewhere? Is this going to take the place of that?
Mr. Chair,
Representative Hansen.
Representative Hackbarth, my intent would this would be separate from that. I don't believe that. I'd have to check with Representative Dill if that moved out of his committee or it's in the possession of this committee, but I don't think that's included in this bill anywhere else. I would hope that we would get the report before we do any, sorry, Representative Benson, but before we do any more of these, because I just think we're going to be getting one after the other coming.
Well,
Representative Hackbarth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and maybe the committee administrator, Representative Wagenius, can let us know. I think we sent the bill to this committee, and I think it was going to be included in the omnibus finance bill, but I'm not sure what happened to it.
It's not.
Representative Hornstein's bill. Or maybe Representative Dill can answer that.
Representative Dill.
Yeah, my recollection, the bill was laid over.
Oh.
And we got down into the cattails, and so we laid it over.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hackbarth. I have a question from Representative Benson, but I also have a comment from Mr. Meyer. Representative Benson, would you like to wait for Mr. Meyer?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's, Mr. Meyer and I have been working with the Shavers Lake issue, and he's assured me that, you know, he's attempting to move forward on it. And I think Representative Hansen does not have to worry that I've somehow jumped ahead of some general investigation of this issue, because nothing substantive has happened yet, although there are some good meetings, apparently, with the department and the people at Shavers Lake. Here are a group of homeowners who are really victims, in my opinion, of city planners who decided they could solve stormwater problems for the city by dumping it in a sand bottom lake and ruining the environmental situation for the homeowners around that. And these people are prepared to pay out of their own pocket, and somehow that's not acceptable. So I'm hoping it will move forward, and possibly Representative Hansen's proposal here will help facilitate moving these issues forward, not only for Shavers Lake, but also Minneapolis Lake as well.
Thank you, Representative Benson. Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, just for the record, briefly, we are working with the Minneapolis Parks Board as well on the Loring Lake issue. That basin has been, basically it's a man-made basin that they dredged, put a geosynthetic liner in it a couple decades ago, and they're looking to maintain that. They do have a permit that is existing, allowing them to do some maintenance to that pond. So again, if that issue and the Shavers Lake issue just shows the complicated nature of what we're trying to resolve here with this study. So we would support the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Meyer. Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. We have the A24 amendment. Who is offering that? Is that Representative Dill? Representative Dill moves the A24 amendment. Representative Dill, to your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A24. And members, so there's no confusion, there was an A15 in the amendment, I'm sorry, in the packet that was previously filed, and this was also filed in time for the deadline. So the A15 is laid aside. It's the A24 is the one that I have full intentions of adopting. And what that does is it makes the appropriation for two things. The language is in the bill on page 10, section 13, for the trap shooting sports facilities grant. And we've gone over that in numerous committees. This makes the appropriation from, if you think back, for those who were here, we had a $300,000 appropriation. A few years ago, we foresaw the explosion of this youth trap shooting. And so I don't think anybody saw it turning into 6,000 kids by this point, but we saw it getting bigger, of course. Now it's beyond our scope even of thinking. But we had $300,000 was appropriated for a pre-design of a metropolitan shooting facility that would be kind of a statewide thing. That was completed by the DNR, and that hasn't proceeded any further forward because of funding. And because the author of that, which was me, hasn't pushed it for that reason. So there was some money left over in the account. We, in the bill here, in the appropriation, talks about $100,000 going to the Itasca Gun Club for shooting sports facilities improvements, and the remaining balance of that $300,000 account is about $164,000, maybe $168,000. I can't remember, $64,000 or $68,000. And that is money then would be tap out the account of the $300,000, and we would get the most possible money we can get into that account, into the trap shooting facilities in the coming year or years subsequent, before we make a larger appropriation, and then there won't be anybody coming for any money out of that particular piece of legislation, and that will be behind us, and we can just look forward. So it's basically $164,000 or $168,000, I can't remember, maybe.
Mr. Hagemeyer.
Mr. Chair, the total in that account is $268,000, so $100,000 would be to the first purpose, and then $168,000 would be the remaining.
Thank you, Mr. Hagemeyer.
Thank you. And so $168,000 for the kids then, which is $64,000 more than I had originally wanted to get for this, but we found a way to get more, and we worked with Mr. Meyer, and we're in agreement on the idea that the $164,000 moves forward.
Thank you, Representative Dill. Representative Wagenius, what's your thoughts on the amendment?
I'm supporting Representative Dill.
Thank you, Representative Wagenius. Discussion to the amendment. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dill, what's happening at the Itasca County Gun Club?
Representative Dill.
They're going to use it for improving the shooting sports for youth recruitment, safety, and trap shooting improvements. It's a multiple prong. That gun club is a fairly large facility, and it has gone down. You know, the history of this is that there's a huge donut hole of people that do trap shooting. You got kids like my son that started trap shooting when he's really young. Then he got into college, and then he couldn't afford it because I wouldn't pay in the tab. Then he got out of college, and he had a house and a car, and he couldn't afford it. And then he probably going to get a wife, and he won't be able to afford it even more. But then he gets into his 40s, and suddenly he can afford it again. Well, and then as he gets older, he can't do it anymore. Well, what we didn't have was any feedstock coming in, and so the interest in the club kind of waned, and the thing started to go downhill, the facilities, the bathrooms, the buildings, and all that stuff. And that's what they're going to do with the $100,000 is work on that facility.
Okay. Representative McNamara, you content? Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Dill. There's some private money coming in now as well. I know my employer, who passed away about a year and a half ago, they set up an account to do this because he was an avid hunter and sporting clays and everything else, and his goal was to get children involved. So, you know, this is a classic example of public-private partnership, if you will, too.
Thank you, Representative Hamilton. Seeing no further discussion to the amendment, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. We have the A23 amendment. Representative Hackbarth, I believe that's yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move the A23 amendment.
Representative Hackbarth moves the A23 amendment. Representative Hackbarth, to your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This amendment is actually part of a bill that I had, and we ran out of time to hear the bill, so I was recommended to pick what was important out of the bill, the most important thing that we had to do, and this is it. It's a non-resident trail pass for off-road motorcycles. And this is supported by the off-road motorcycle folks. We have them here to testify if you'd like to take any testimony on it. This is very similar to the ATV non-resident trail pass that I passed a few years ago, and I'd stand for questions.
Thank you, Representative Hackbarth. First, Representative Wagenius, do you have a comment or pleasure to the amendment?
I would be glad to support it.
Thank you, Representative Wagenius. Representative Dill?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, had we had the time to hear the entire package of information, I was also supporting that, but I certainly support this amendment.
Thank you. Further discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Member.
Representative Ward, do you have the A19 amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the A19 amendment.
Representative Ward moves the A19 amendment. Representative Ward, to your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. Woodbury has long worked on water quality issues, water quantity issues. I've lived there nearly 40 years, and we have had water restrictions and water conservation and water care requirements that entire time, I think long before many other cities gave that much thought. I believe Mr. Johnson is here from the City of Woodbury to tell us a little bit more about the amendment.
Seeing Mr. Johnson coming down to the stand, Representative Wagenius, what's your preference on the amendment?
I am supporting the amendment. We have heard. I've been visited by the folks in Woodbury. They made an excellent case of to support the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Wagenius. Mr. Johnson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Craig Johnson with the League of Minnesota Cities, and have communicated with Woodbury about this. This is not only an issue for that city, though. This is related to is we have been pushing for quite a while to have stormwater not just be treated as a waste product that's discharged, but to find ways to make use of it before we just send it on to the nearest stream or river. And we actually, in our stormwater permits, have significant requirements on reducing the flow of stormwater because we have large rain events that blow the banks out of creeks and streams and add lots of nutrient load to waterways. So we think it's really not an appropriate use of a permit fee to have the state collect an additional permit fee when actually all we're doing is trying to accomplish the state goal in the first place of having less stormwater runoff. The second issue that's addressed in the amendment, Mr. Chair and members, is likewise there are watershed districts that are doing projects where they are taking contaminated small water bodies, treating the water and discharging it back, not using it at all, just cleaning the water, and they also are asking that the permit fee be waived in that case. We've been working with the DNR on this language. This is something that has not been charged as a permit fee in the past, but these people were told in the future it would be becoming charged as a permit fee, so we wanted to make sure that it didn't have to become an issue for these projects later.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure my question's for Mr. Johnson, but it could be. Mr. Johnson, is this, maybe it's the chair. Madam Chair, the 3M does a significant amount of pumping currently in the Lake Elmo area to reduce the movement of PFBA. I think I said that right. I missed one letter, sorry. Oh, PFOA. Thank you, everybody. All right. Are we charging them a fee currently, and is this fee now going to be waived?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I do not know if we charge them a fee, but what I do know is this does not waive a fee on a private institution. The wording is specific to stormwater runoff and where public entities treat public waters. So that's the limitation of what I worked on in this because we were dealing with city and watershed district projects.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Johnson, 3M pumps the water out of the ground. Does it go through their own private treatment facility or does it go through the city's treatment facility? Is their own privates?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I do not know the specifics of how the various 3M water treatment systems work.
Okay. I'm just trying to figure out, Mr. Chair, if there's a hole in our budget. I'm assuming this doesn't apply. I guess we'll have to find out.
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, the reason this is drafted the way it is because these projects had not been recently charged in a water appropriation permit fee. We just wanted to continue that as the case.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. We have the A11 amendment. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd move the A11 amendment.
Representative Hansen moves the A11 amendment. Discussion to the A11 amendment.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, and I'd ask Mr. Meyer to come down also if folks have any questions. This was a bill that I'd introduced that a number of you had co-authored and was heard in transportation committee last week. And the idea here is not to create another park or another affinity plate, but to create a plate that serves as the pass to the park. So you wouldn't have to go get stickers on your windshield. My original idea was that you'd pay up front. The department had concerns about the finances of that. So this is the recommended language that we came in agreement to. And we do have a preliminary fiscal note on this as well. So it would not go into effect until the new licensing system goes into effect in 2017. So there's not an initial saving addition to the parks fund until that time. And maybe Mr. Meyer could fill any details that I have left out.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members, I think Representative Hansen did a great job. His bill, as originally introduced, was a $125 one-time fee. We did have concerns about that, is that after a period of 5 years, if a person contained, kept that plate, they'd be getting into the parks for free into the future. This actually is almost one or twice the going rate of what an annual park sticker is today, so it does provide some benefit to the Natural Resources Fund for state park operations. The dollars are allowed for those uses. We feel all of our concerns have been addressed on this issue, and I think there would be a large group of support for it out there with the park users.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Representative Wagenius.
I also think there's going to be a large group of supporters.
Thank you, Representative Wagenius. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, I've got two questions. First of all, did we do a fiscal note to measure the negative impact on folks like myself and many of us here that have a loon or a deer, or I think my wife's either got a bird or a flower on their license plate? So now instead of doing that, they'll switch over and do this. So what is that going to do to that? I'm missing that name of that fund, but it's a real important for rim match or something we use it for. What's the fiscal note show for the negative impact on those license plates?
Mr.
Meyer.
Chairman, members, you're talking about the critical habitat account, critical habitat mat, rim, critical habitat plates are what you're talking about.
Mr. Meyer, I'm talking in landscaper talk. It's a pretty license plate we have. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, sir. Sorry.
Mr. Meyer, continue.
It's hard to tell what the impacts are going to be. We estimated about possibly $200,000 or so. So it's just a ballpark. We estimated in looking at the calculations, and they said approximately 25% of the people who are buying an annual sticker may buy the license plate. And of those license plate users, so trying to figure out what the actual number was. But the fiscal impact we were saying was about $200,000, possibly $200,000. I feel personally that it could be two different audiences we're looking at. I think the people who will buy this plate, because this is $20 more a year than the rim critical habitat or the loon plate actually is. That's $30. The benefit a person gets off of this is they get a free park entrance all year long. So it's like having a license plate and getting a free park pass. So I do have our draft.
Mr. Meyer, I think that either Representative Hansen or Mr. Hagemeyer has a number.
And here. I have
Representative
right too,
Hansen, if you'd be so kind, just inform us.
So, Mr. Chair, the new account, the revenue anticipated is 1.722. The loss through the critical habitat at a 25% attrition rate would be 255. The loss from the loss of the daily or the stickers would be 852. So you have a net gain of 615.
Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Hansen, you're getting to my question along this thought. So are you going to put some of the $50 into the critical rim, the loon plates?
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair and Representative McNamara, this is a state park account. The department in the unofficial estimates a 25% attrition rate. I believe that Mr. Meyer just said he thinks that probably is lower. So the attrition rate may be more likely 10%. That would be a loss to the critical habitat plate, but you would be having the gain to the Parks and Trails Fund.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Hansen, maybe as this goes forward, it's going to Ways and Means and to the floor. Maybe you could think about the possibility of putting a percentage of that $50 to the, and actually you probably could just put some language in to hold the critical match whole by DNR's got some number crunchers over there. They could crunch the numbers and return the money. Mr. Chair, I have one more question.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, this looks like it's step one of step two, reminiscent of about 4 years ago, where DNR had proposed to have a special license plate for entry to state parks. Would this set up a perfect vehicle for you to come back next year with a plan to go? Wasn't that on the license plates? You were just going to charge everybody when they renewed their license plate? Well, that was everybody in the whole state was going to pay it. Okay, my memory's coming back. Thank you. A little bit different. It's not really step one. It could still be step one of step two. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, just to be clear, that was not my intent. My intent was to make it easier for Minnesotans so when they've got their plate, they can go through and they don't have to get another ticket. So,
Mr. Meyer, could you clarify one thing for me? This wouldn't take effect until after 2017, so we have at least a biennium to go and work out any issues. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, members, it does, and I think we may want to change that as this move forward, because I think DPS's concern is that they need to get their new computer system up and running before they can do this, so we may need to look at some language that's similar to a bill that Representative Dill has that has an effective date of X or until the new database or computer system is up and running, whichever is later.
So the answer is we have some time to figure this out.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Meyer. Representative Poppe.
To that point, Mr. Chair, so this is a bit preliminary. I mean, I think it's a good idea. I'm just wondering about if it's not going to go into effect until 2017 or sometime in the future. Is there an additional lead time that we need for developing the license plates or other things? I mean, it seems like it's ahead of its time. Just curious about that, and I don't know if that's a Representative Hansen question, perhaps.
Representative Hansen.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Poppe. This has gone through the Transportation Policy Committee. There was support there. This is the Finance Committee to make sure that it would be, you'd have the competition for the design for the parks. DPS's concern was to make sure the plates were readable. I support that. So I think this is a timely thing. I think people will get excited about it. There's a marketing opportunity here to get folks aware, so I would ask for folks' support.
Representative Torkelson, did you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hansen, I see that the $50 annual contribution is necessary to keep the plates active. What happens when someone does not pay the $50?
Representative Hansen.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Torkelson, their plate is not active. They are driving with an expired plate because it's their renewal annually that you have on it's your sticker that you're putting on your plate. So you're driving with an expired tab.
Representative Torkelson, thanks. So when they renew their license each year, they will have to pay the $50 at that time, or they won't get a tab.
Representative Hansen?
Correct.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Dill?
Representative Hansen, what happens if in the ninth year that they have a plate and they haven't had it replaced, they decide not, that they don't want a state park sticker? Did that question already get asked and answered? And so then they go to the Roseau Jody Ziska and get her and tell her, well, I don't want that anymore. Do they have to buy a new plate?
I do have to remind folks we are not the Transportation Policy Committee, but Representative Hansen, did you have an answer?
Mr. Chair, I don't have an answer to that particular question right now.
All right. Further discussion? Seeing none, all is in favor of the amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. We have the A-12 amendment.
Mr. Chair, I believe that's mine.
Representative Hamilton, you'd like to move the A-12 amendment?
I'll move the A-12 amendment, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hamilton moves the A-12 amendment. Representative Hamilton, to your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this addresses the pollinators, actually the enforcement piece of that. And, you know, my line of thinking is, you know, let's take a little bit of time here instead of just jumping right to enforcement. Give us some time. Accommodate us as far as us. I'm talking about anybody that has to do with that is impacted by this. Educate, take time to educate them, take some additional time for implementation, and then we can come back and review all that and then add in some enforcement language. And Mr. Chair, I ask for a roll call.
Roll call having been requested. Thank you, Representative Hamilton. Representative Wagenius, what's your pleasure to the amendment?
I am going to be voting against it and would ask members to vote against it, but I would also ask Representative Hansen to explain the reasons we should be voting against it. This was his bill.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Enforcement is an important component of Chapter 18. The Department of Ag has various authorities to enforce the law. Frankly, the pollinators don't have the time to reflect. They don't have the time to wait. We have a crisis on our hands right now. And so the components that are involved here of having a response team to provide the science in determining what's happening with each individual, each incident that occurs, and to provide for the reimbursement for those folks that are losing their property. Enforcement is a, and when I taught pesticide applicator training, the label was the law and the key was the label. So without enforcement, enforcement is an education component. Enforcement is critical. And so I would encourage folks to vote against the amendment.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe a question to Representative Hansen, if he'd yield. Would there be any latitude there as far as, instead of a complete, striking this language completely, to have it go into effect, maybe give us 2 years or something like that? Would there be an appetite to do something like that, Representative Hansen?
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hamilton. I appreciate that effort. It would be my expectation that the department would be doing education to inform folks about this. The beekeepers are farmers as well. I don't think there's time to delay, so I would not defer implementation.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And before the vote, I just want to remind the committee that today is my birthday.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday.
Representative Hamilton. First, you, Representative Hansen.
We'll have to bring you some honey, probably.
Seeing no further discussion. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just on line 7.9. So this is a May provision anyway. So that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be an enforcement action. It's an allowable, permissible one. Is that correct, Representative Hansen?
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair and Representative Poppy, that's correct. The commissioner is going to take the discretion that they have, and that I know from experience working there many years ago that they are going to apply their best professional experience to determine if an enforcement action is taken. And with other components of the bill where we're providing the science to make that decision, then the May provides that they can back that up.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wonder if there's anybody from the Department of Ag here to testify.
Not seeing anyone approaching the table. We have taken testimony on this already.
Mr. Chair, just for the record, the Department of Agriculture supports the bill. They've testified as such. Mr. Cruz was here. I don't know where he is right now, but they have testified, I believe, in two committees that they support the bill.
Thank you. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Question for Representative Hansen. To your knowledge, have any other states gone to this length to address this problem, or is Minnesota going to be the first state to do this type of thing?
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, you know, last couple months ago I went to the Association of Ag Chairs. Representative Poppy wasn't able to go, and we actually passed a pollinator resolution there. So we, but that was encouraging a lot of the habitat things that we've already done. So you and I were there together, and but to my knowledge, we are the first. Minnesota is often a leader on these things, and I would anticipate we would be again. And I think other states are probably going to follow in some form. I mean, I think they're already having discussions based on what we did last year with encouraging habitat on the public lands. So,
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Yes, I recall that meeting down there. I guess the concern maybe Representative Hamilton is trying to get at, that we're all concerned about bees and don't want to see the loss of any more bees if possible. But we just don't know yet if the science is there, has all the answers definitively, and don't want to give the impression that they were going after the neonicotinoids or however you say that word in a manner that's going to be a negative to agriculture or to the beekeepers as well, and just have that concern that this may give that appearance is all.
Representative Hamilton. Representative Fabian.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we're setting up something with good intentions that's going to create friction between two parts of the egg sector. I think that we're going to see hard feelings develop between beekeepers and farmers who are using chemicals and so forth, and the Department of Ag is going to get caught in the middle of this. I appreciate what we're trying to do, but I just, you know, the word may gives me a lot of headaches. I don't think that may is the type of word that gives me much comfort when dealing with different agencies. I think that it should be something more definitive, but at the same time, I appreciate the latitude that May does create, but my concern is the application of May. Representative Hansen talks about, we've outlined the science in the bill, you know, for making decisions and taking enforcement and punishing people who probably don't understand all this. We know that there's going to be education going on, and I just think that we're putting the cart before the horse when it comes to punishment. I'm totally opposed to taking enforcement action this early. I think that Representative Hamilton has a very reasonable request to consider some sort of a delay, at least in the implementation. We've done that before, and I would encourage the members to give serious consideration to his amendment.
Representative Hamilton.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, I remember when we changed the law here a while back where fines would then be diverted from the general fund into a specific account. And the fines collected after we did that climbed substantially. It was over 700%, and if memory serves me correctly. And so that's my fear, is now all of a sudden we have the potential of another money grab, if you will, for a department. And, you know, it's just a concern that we have. And so here's a program that everybody is thinking that's, you know, it's good, it's essential, that we need to address the pollinator issue. But let's stay focused on that and the education piece and the implementation piece and not jump right to enforcement. So that's my point.
Well, thank you, Representative Hamilton. And I know that the department isn't here, but I don't want to impugn their motives. I think there are a lot of good folks there, and they're going to do their job as professionals.
Okay. I'll do that, Mr. Chair.
Seeing no further discussion, roll call having been requested, the clerk will call the roll.
McGinnis?
No.
Falk?
Been requested, the clerk will call the roll.
McGinnis?
No.
Falk?
No.
McNamara?
Yes.
Anderson?
Yes.
Benson?
No.
Bly?
No.
Clark?
No.
Dill?
No.
Erickson?
No.
Fabian?
Yes.
Fiber?
No.
Hackbarth? Excuse? Hamilton?
Yes.
Hansen?
No.
Kahn? Absent. Keel?
Yes.
Poppy?
Yes.
Torkelson?
Yes.
Ward?
No.
There being 7 ayes, 10 nays, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Representative Hamilton, sorry to disappoint you on your birthday. We have the A22 amendment, which that is an amendment to the A1 amendment. The A1 amendment has been distributed for people's reference. Who is moving or offering the A22 amendment? Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A22 is my amendment. It, if you go to the A1 amendment, H3158A1 on page 12, line 7, as it says it changes the fee from $1,000 to $250. And Mr. Chair, I have some questions related to the amendment to ask the agency whenever that's appropriate.
Well, if you'd like them to come down now, I think now would be the appropriate time.
Thank you, Mr.
Chair. One amendment.
Who from the agency would like to come down?
12.7.
We don't see anybody rushing to the table. Mr. Kudelka, welcome.
Mr. Chair and committee members, for the record, I'm Kirk Kudelka with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. I'm sorry, Representative, I didn't hear the question. Would you mind?
Representative McNamara, would you please repeat your question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Kudelka, on page 12, line 7, there's a fee of $1,000, and then it looks like there's a duplicating of the fee on line 12.13. Could you, I'm trying to figure out, and I'm wondering if it possibly duplicates again in the future. I just want to get on the record what is happening with this fee, what it's used for, and the reasons of why we double it in the second year.
Mr. Kudelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members.
And I think you have to identify yourself for the record.
Sure. Mr. Chair and committee members, I'm Kirk Kudelka with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. This is a system where it does the next batch of reporting when a person comes in with that information, a business, it is meant to double. It's part of the function of the system to create incentive for folks to no longer have that priority chemical in their product. What it does is the easiest way out of the fee program or the program is to show that you don't have the chemical and then there's no fee. The second part of your question is what would this fee be used for? So there's a number of things that are built into the program here. One is the database system that the agency would have to put together. The program also is used for their in here our spot checks to make sure the products are lining up the correct way, if they're saying they're clear or not, to make sure that along that same way. That's something that the state of Washington suggested should be done if a bill were passed in another state. There are dollars here for education for Department of Commerce and Department of Health to help with providing that information out to folks and folks can understand what it means. There's the agency staff for processing the reports, and then also there are dollars, green chemistry dollars, that would go out in attempts to find alternatives to the priority chemicals so that businesses would have something to move to easily and again get out of the fee structure. The goal is that these folks would not pay a fee because they're no longer using the priority chemical.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure if my question is for you or Representative Wagenius, but Representative Winkler, when he was the author of the bill before Representative Wagenius became the author of this bill, mentioned the fiscal note, or maybe it was Chair Wagenius mentioned. Do we have the fiscal note for this?
Representative Wagenius.
I do have a bottom line on the fiscal note, and that bottom line is what we included in this bill, and it will be $335,000. We do not have the detail within that fiscal note at this minute. I understand it is coming to us quickly, and it should be here, but we are Ways and Means on Monday. Will you have it by Monday?
Mr. Kudelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members are working on it right now with the three agencies, and that should be very doable.
Thank you, Mr. Kudelka. Representative Wagenius.
Yes, well, we will be in Ways and Means with this bill, and questions about the innards of the fiscal note would be appropriate there.
Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Wagenius. You and I, Representative Kahn, Representative Clark, and Representative Hamilton are the only people on Ways and Means. I think you're expecting more than us, just us, to pass this today. I would suggest you get more votes than that if you want it to pass. So just so folks know, we're moving it without a fiscal note. Mr. Chair, my next question, I guess I'm going to ask some questions related to the fiscal note because we don't have it. Mr. Kudelka, Commissioner Kudelka, do you know how much is anticipated to be collected with this fee. And then I was also wondering what the FTEs are that are going to be hired to fund these actions.
Mr. Kudelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, we have some estimates right now on this. We are still fine-tuning those numbers with the fiscal note request, but we do have an idea of what the revenue would be. So we're still firming up what the number of FTEs needed for the construction of the database and the ongoing functions. And I'll turn over my colleague who has a little bit more information, Ms. Fauthammer, regarding the revenue.
Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Shannon Lotthammer. I'm the director of the Environmental Analysis and Outcomes Division. So based on our estimates of revenue, we would be looking at in the out years around, so in fiscal years like 17 and 18, between $600,000 and $1 million in revenue being developed and or being generated by the fees that would be part of the reporting process. One of the things that is included in the proposal and the approach for this bill is that any revenues that were collected that would be above what was needed for the program activities that Mr. Kudelka just described, so for education, for developing the reporting mechanism, for getting information out to Minnesota consumers, would then be available for providing grants out for the green chemistry initiatives that Mr. Kudelka mentioned. So we would be turning those revenues around to really provide incentives to move away from the use of priority chemicals and find alternatives to their use.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Lotthammer, that helps a lot. Thank you. Can I ask you, seeing how it seems you're a person that knows something about this bill, how would it consider the risk if the chemical, it looks like if the chemical is in the children's product, it doesn't look like it talks about the safety. I know recently I bought a push toy and I probably broke the rules because it said it was for 3 and over and I gave it to Luke on his second birthday. But it has some special stuff in the plastic to make it not shatter so he doesn't get hurt. And I think it might be one of the listed chemicals. So sometimes these chemicals are used in a safe manner, in a safe percentage or whatever. How do we take that into account in this bill? Because it looks like it just says if there's any of it at all, it has to be listed as that chemical is one of being used, even if it's used in a safe manner and for some making the toy more safe than if it wasn't there. How do we account for that?
Ms. Lotthammer.
Mr. Chair and Representative McNamara, the bill is really about reporting the chemical use so that Minnesota consumers can have that information and make decisions about whether or not they want to purchase products that have the chemicals in them. It's not about identifying the safety level. The Department of Health does go through the process of looking at potential concerns in identifying the chemicals or the priority chemicals that are identified, so the 9 priority chemicals that we have for Minnesota. But as far as the bill here today, it's about reporting that information so that we can then provide it to Minnesota consumers so they can use that information in their purchasing decision-making.
Representative McNamara.
So I'm trying to figure this out. This is to get the consumers more informed that a chemical of concern is on a list that makes a product more safe. We're letting them know it's in the product because they should be concerned, but it's on the list because they should be concerned, because they should be troubled in concerned, not concerned because the product is more safe. Where's the correlation there?
Ms. Lotthammer.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative McNamara, I think the concern here is that there are concerns that are associated with the priority chemicals and potential concerns about potential health impacts, and those are the things that are evaluated when the priority chemicals are identified. So this is again about getting information to consumers about the products that those chemicals are in, and then also about providing incentives for moving away from those priority chemicals so that the types of properties that you're talking about that make products more safe maybe can be provided by other chemicals that don't have the concerns associated with potential health impacts.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Lotthammer, and I'm trying to remember the nursery rhyme. It involved a wolf. and it's a very good lesson here. We may use a little itty-bitty amount of lead to solder a circuit board inside a child's toy, and that may make the circuit board more safe, or it may make it work, actually. Eight of these nine chemicals are regulated by the federal government already. It looks like we're being alarmist here, and I'm trying to understand the why of it. I get where you could say if they were unsafe, but you're telling me we're not saying if it's at a safe level. The feds may already think or believe, agree it's at a safe level, but we're going to notify people it's in there. I envision somebody going up with their smartphone and zapping Luke's little push toy, and we can't buy it now. Then they go buy one that doesn't have it, and the thing shatters on them. What have we proven? We should have common rationale sense behind what we're doing here. I think that's what's important. And it looks to me like you haven't made allowance for trace elements and where it may make the product better. And I'm trying to understand, Representative Wagenius, where are we going? Where's the allowance for trace elements? Where is the allowance that the chemical may actually make it better? The FDA already regulates eight of these nine chemicals. Where are we going with this bill? This bill's a lot more than Washington. This isn't copying one state. This is putting us up front and putting up a bigger fence around our border.
If that's a question to me, I think I have a lot more faith than our manufacturers that they are competitive, and part of the competition will be to say, my product is better for your child, and that's going to happen. You can see that you're just repackaging now. I mean, look at the food packaging and the things that's, that food packaging says. So I have a great deal of faith in our manufacturers, and they're going to say, no lead. That's it. No lead. We don't need it. They can do better.
Representative McNamara.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair, and sorry for your frustrated look. Madam Chair, I'm trying to understand. If one of these chemicals actually makes the product more safe, we actually are saying we should be concerned here. There are examples of where the product is made more safe by maybe a very small amount of one of these chemicals to stop a plastic, for instance, from shattering. I think we're the cart's before the horse in this bill. And my fee was concerned, where I go on the amendment, Mr. Chair, is you heard, it doesn't matter how slight of an amount of a chemical is in there. Even if it's just very much, it's the FDA allows it, it's okay at that level, we're asking them to tell us how many chemicals are in there. Again, I think we're putting up borders, and I'm trying to understand the rationale of the why. And, Mr. Chair, at that point, I just think it's too bad.
Thank you, Representative McNamara. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, some of these products use slight amounts of these chemicals, and there may be no alternative. Are they expected to just keep paying this fee in perpetuity?
Representative Wagenius.
I certainly have a lot more faith in products than you do. And let me just give you an example. Many years ago, the battery manufacturers all had a teeny, teeny, teeny bit of mercury in their batteries. And we knew that a teeny, teeny, teeny bit of mercury getting in an incinerator, going up the stack, and landing in a lake was all it was necessary. Teeny, teeny, teeny bit. The amount of mercury on the head of a pin would be enough to pollute a 40-acre lake. So we talked to the manufacturers about that, and because we knew a lot of batteries were going up in the incinerators. And lo and behold, after lots of negotiation, lots of talk, we said, and they agreed, okay, no more mercury in alkaline batteries. And within, I had first been told this is impossible, but within I think that the law passed in like April or May, and in July, the battery manufacturers were advertising mercury-free, and they had little pine trees on their batteries and on the packaging to say we were mercury-free. They went into a competition who could get it out first saying mercury-free. And these were the big three, Duracell, Rayovac, and Eveready. So I am a big believer that competition works and that manufacturers will take this to heart and we will have safer products for our children.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. You didn't answer my question. Representative McGinnis, will, if they cannot find an alternative, will they be paying these fees over and over and over and over again?
Representative McGinnis.
I just cannot accept the notion that there is not a substitute for lead, that there's not a substitute for mercury, not a substitute for cadmium. I think maybe mercury isn't one of them, but lead and cadmium are two of the priority chemicals. I have trouble accepting that notion.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I think I heard correctly the testifier from MPCA say that the Department of Health is already collecting information on 8 of these 9 chemicals listed in this bill. So I guess I'd like a clarification again, if I could, as to what additional safety will this bill bring that the Department of Health is not already providing by them collecting information on nearly all these chemicals, and what do they do with that information once they get it?
I don't know that there's anybody from the Department of Health or PCA or some one of the folks who's been working on this bill could come down and help with that. It's not a question for me.
Mr. Peterson, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kirk Peterson with Reyes, Michaels, and Walt, representing the Healthy Legacy Coalition. I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question, Representative.
Representative Anderson.
Earlier testimony from the MPCA said that they were already collecting data on 8 of the 9 chemicals listed in this bill, talking about their database, expanding their database. And my question is, what additional does this bill do in terms of gathering that information that the Department of Health is not doing already?
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, my understanding is that they are not at this point collecting information on individual products. They are simply assembling information on the health impacts of these 9 priority chemicals that are known to have health effects, such as their carcinogens, causing birth defects, causing learning disabilities, things like that. That's what these 9 priority chemicals are. So at this point, the only information that they have gathered is on the health impacts of these. They know that they are used in consumer products that are marketed towards children, but they, at this point, we don't know which of the products contain these individual chemicals.
Representative Anderson.
So would the Department of Health put out any consumer bulletins or whatever telling of their concerns of these chemicals and advising consumers to make the choice of not purchasing any products that may not contain these chemicals? Do they do that?
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, at this point, the information would be housed at the Pollution Control Agency, not at the Department of Health, and they would merely list the chemicals and the products that are provided to them from manufacturers. The information on health effects of these chemicals is pretty widely known, and that's available. So again, consumers would have that information available to them.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I'm curious, after looking at what my amendment's drafted to, I'm wondering if there's someone from the industry that could testify. It seems to me, when I looked at the case in Washington, I'm wondering, what is it going to cost businesses to comply with these regulations that the MPCA said they're going to collect somewhere between $600,000 and $1 million. What is it going to cost industry, and what are their alternatives? I guess I'd like to hear from them if they're in the audience.
Mr. Chairman, if I may,
Peterson.
Before I know there's somebody from the, Mr. Andy's here to answer that, but if I can real quickly address that. The things from Washington are different. Washington has 66 priority chemicals on their list. We only have 9, and most of those chemicals are on Washington's list. So the reporting and the testing has already been done. So we believe that the costs here in Minnesota are going to be significantly lower. Also, they've used the figure before that this is going to cost them $27 million to comply. We have some doubts about that number. The number that they're using was based on a business estimate analysis that was done. It is not an actual business cost number. And the range that that number came from actually ranged from $2.8 million to $27.5 million. So the true cost of reporting in Washington is probably somewhere in between from what we understand. And we also asked for information on how this would affect Minnesota businesses. And we picked the top retailer in the state. I believe Target is the biggest retailer in the state. And for at the $1,000 level, it would cost Target Corporation only $25,000 to comply with this. So we don't think that that's too onerous. But if you want to hear from the industry, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Would someone from industry like to come down and offer comments? I would say that we did take testimony on this beforehand. We don't need to rehash all the testimony that was given earlier in the day, but let's stick to the questions at hand. Representative McNamara, would you like to offer your question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the testifier, if you could explain, Mr. Peterson said that your costs will be drastically less here in Minnesota than Washington, the only other state, but he said something alarming to me. I didn't realize. So Target Corporation, as a retailer, is going to have to pay costs? Who's all going to pay costs, and who are all these? I just thought the toy manufacturers we were going to hook, and we ran Tonka out of business a long time ago, so I was assuming we were safe. We don't have any toy manufacturers here anymore, so we didn't need to worry, but I'm a little concerned now. If you could answer my question.
To the testifier, please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Andy Hackman here on behalf of the Toy Industry Association. Mr. Chair, Representative, in terms of looking at the cost first, some of the comments that have been made earlier, this program is significantly different from Washington State in that it's GPC, or directly to the individual item reporting. At the Washington State database, it's at a brick level. So it's several steps up from the individual product. It's a classification of product classes where the reporting occurs. So the cost estimates in Washington State, I think, are still relevant because we're going to be multiplying this based upon every individual product and every individual chemical. Yes, Washington State has 66 chemicals that are on their list. The 9 chemicals that are listed here are also on Washington State's list, but the testing will need to be duplicated and redone because the structure of this proposed legislation is significantly different, and it is at a much more granular level than the reporting that takes place in Washington State. The $27 million figure certainly is something that we've relied upon. It hasn't been disputed in Washington State in terms of the basis for that assessment. So right now that's the number that we've worked from, and the Department of Ecology hasn't said that they've determined other additional costs. In terms of the fee itself, if it does multiply, I think it should be noted that it could potentially impact naturally occurring. You can, many of these chemicals, lead, cadmium, formaldehyde, are naturally occurring. They occur in this desk here because it's made out of wood. So you cannot have a zero level in terms of these materials and because of their natural occurrence. So the level, there is a 100 ppm threshold level for contaminants, but you can have contaminants potentially above that threshold. So a company could have the impact of having to report because naturally occurring elements or occurring materials are in their products. And beyond that, I do want to note that 6 of the 9 chemicals, I think we've jumped back and forth about which of the chemicals, 6 of the 9 chemicals are preemptively regulated at the federal level. Cadmium, lead, formaldehyde and the three phthalates that are listed are preemptively regulated at the federal level. So the idea that there's nothing going on to address safety, certainly our industry has been proactive in addressing those elements. And the flame retardants that are listed here are not used in toys. So from that standpoint, we don't expect that we'd have reporting, but there's no safety concern from that perspective.
Thank you, Mr. Hackman. Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a question I believe for Representative Wagenius. Why would Target have to pay something?
Representative Wagenius or Mr. Peterson, would you?
Mr. Peterson is going to answer that. But I'd also ask him to answer the question about the trace amounts. When we did the mercury in batteries, what we said was added mercury. So if there was background, then it was trace. By doing that, it was the added mercury that was the problem. So you can figure these things out. We're problem solvers, and we can figure these things out.
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, yes, we have met several times since this bill was floating around last year with the Chamber of Commerce, with the toy industry representatives here locally, and with other business people to try and address some of the concerns. One of the things that we did put in was language regarding intentionally added chemicals. We made it specifically for intentionally added chemicals, and yes, they do have to report those. If they're what's referred to as contaminant levels or just free-floating or naturally occurring levels, as Mr. Hackman referred to, those don't necessarily have to be reported. And Mr. Chair, a few other things. Representative McNamara, you referred to a lead soldering on an internal component. If you read the bill language, there are four different tiers for reporting what kind of a exposure level a child will have to one of these things. A tier level is something that the kid is going to put in his mouth or you're going to rub on his skin. An internal component, as you referred to, a mechanical piece on the inside, is called a tier four level category. And those may not have to be reported at all, determined on a case-by-case basis, which is done in Washington State. They report Tier 4 components, internal components, that aren't likely to come in contact with a kid. You might not have to report those at all. Regarding the brick-level reporting and how this is different than Washington State's model, the initial report that's done, actually the first full report that is done, which wouldn't be till 3 years after this takes effect, is actually at the brick level, like Washington State's. So it's just kind of a category, a backpack, shoe, something like that. That's the brick level. Our products contain X chemical at this level. It's not until the second and third reporting, which could be anywhere between 4 and 6 to 8 years down the road, if they're continuing to use one of these priority toxic chemicals, that then they have to refer to the internal or to the UPC code. And we think that that's going to give consumers a much more valuable piece of information. Instead of just saying backpack, they can say Dora backpack with green and red stripes. I'm just picking that out of the air. I don't know if Dora backpacks with green and red stripes have phthalates in them or whatever it is. But that is how consumers will be able to use this information in a better way that they're reporting in Washington State. And as far as this federal level, excuse me, I don't want to go on too long, but there was a lot of information thrown out. Some of these are regulated at some level at the federal level. A lot of them are not. They're very specifically regulated chemicals in certain products, in certain toys. Cadmium is only regulated in jewelry in this bill from what we've found, but there are other children's products that they are contained in. So to say that these chemicals are somehow regulated at the federal level isn't really telling the whole story, and there's nothing in state law that regulates products on this level at all, and we're not actually regulating products, we're just reporting them.
So, Mr. Chair.
Representative Wagenius, did you have a comment to finish?
No, if we're about to finish up, and I sense that we are, I'm going to ask members to vote against this amendment, simply because it's not fair. You're going to have others, rather than the manufacturer, pay for the cost, so Minnesota taxpayers would have to make up the difference,
and to get the bill to get enough money. That's not fair. So basically, there isn't the fiscal part of this, the incentive, the dollar to get the lead out, if you would, is not a heavy-duty incentive. Talking about it is. And so with that, I would ask members to vote no.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm going to repeat my question one more time. Why does Target have to pay?
Mr. Peterson or Mr. Hackman, who would like? Mr. Peterson?
Mr. Chairman, members, there's a provision in the language that says if a retailer is also a manufacturer of children's toys, and Target, among other companies, have their own brands, so if they are also, as a retailer, if they are also a manufacturer of toys, then they're subject to the same reporting requirements.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, like, sometimes the dollar stores have their name on the package, so are they then a manufacturer if the package, if the toy is, like, from the dollar store or one of the mass merchants puts their name on it? Do they all become manufacturers, Mr. Peterson?
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, I don't believe so, just because they have their name on the package. I can go back and refer to my other people on this, but I don't think just because their name is on the package that makes them a manufacturer. So we can check on that.
We're getting a little bit astray, but Representative McNamara.
Well, it's interesting that we call it astray because, Mr. Chair, I've been making note on some of your comments, Mr. Peterson. May not have to report, not necessarily have to report. Those were your answers on if there was trace amounts. I don't know that anybody, as far as testimony and telling them that they're off the hook, that's a long way from that. But I think it's interesting, what do you call these, phthalates? You said, well, they're not really regulated by the feds. U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission prohibits BPP, DBP, and DEHP in children products in amounts greater than 0.1%. If that's not regulated, what is it?
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Peterson.
Representative McNamara, that particular code that you're talking about only refers to toys and some baby products. It does not refer to all children's products.
Mr.
Representative
Chair,
McNamara.
I'm referring to a Minnesota Department of Health handout of the 9 chemicals that you're regulating. Right. And, I mean, that's what the Department of Health, you're looking at the same thing. Thank you. So, I mean, this is what the Department of Health is telling us. If they're not telling us the whole story.
Mr. Peterson, could you repeat? You said it didn't apply to, or that applied to toys or didn't apply to toys? Would you just clarify? I missed that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, you'd have to look at how the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission or this brief chart that is on the Department of Health website, and the Department of Health, I believe, is here. They might be able to give more information. It just says children's products, but how they define children's products matters in this case. And my understanding is that only refers to toys and some certain baby products, not all children's products. And Mr. Chairman, regarding your Representative McNamara, whether they may have to report, if you read the language, Tier 4 products are done on a case-by-case basis through the PCA. So the PCA will determine on the Tier 4 or the internal components that aren't likely to be touched by a child whether they have to report, and that is how Washington State handles it.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson, last
Thanks.
Question on this.
Last one for me. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Wagenius, you just mentioned that the fairest way for this to be assessed in talking about the fees and such is that the manufacturer pays these fees and not the taxpayers of Minnesota. But really, this is a cost of doing business in the state. And wouldn't you agree that eventually these costs will be paid by the consumers of Minnesota who buy these products?
Representative Wagenius.
What I really think is that manufacturers, including Target, are smart. And they will say, the public is saying, we don't want lead in our products. We're going to get the lead out. cadmium is another one. We're going to just get it out. It's not necessary. So if anything I think about this bill, it's that these chemicals of concern will disappear a lot faster. And I guess that is my history with dealing with the battery industry. And they were smart. These were the biggest manufacturers in the United States, and they just got the mercury out quickly.
Thank you, Representative Wiginius. Representative Anderson.
But would you not agree that whatever costs are assessed, however small or large, 2 years, 4 years, that the eventual cost will be paid by the consumers of Minnesota?
Representative Wiginius.
Not all consumers. It would be paid for by the mom who's buying the product that may have the lead in it.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative McNamara renews his motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay.
Nay.
The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. We have the A18 amendment. I believe this is Representative Kahn's amendment. She is in Pension Commission at the moment. Would anyone like to offer the amendment on her behalf? Representative Hamilton?
I'm quickly reading through it, but I'll deals with industrialized hemp, correct? Just the funding portion of the study?
I believe so, Representative Hamilton, but you know, to be safe, Ms. Taylor, would you like to just, Mr. Sullivan, would you like to walk us through the amendment as Representative Kahn is not here?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, the A18 amendment would insert new sections in statute defining terms related to industrial hemp and authorizing the Department of Agriculture to conduct a pilot program in accordance with the Federal Farm Bill and to authorize higher education institutions to grow industrial hemp pursuant to the same program. The first portion of the A18 amendment provides funding for the report that you'll see at the end, section 36 on page 2, that requires the Commissioner of Ag to report back with proposed legislation to implement sections 11 and 12, which are start on the first page of the amendment. So there's a delayed effective date for those sections. They would not take effect until July 1st, 2015. Roughly 7 months after the Commissioner of Agriculture's report is due. The first portion then deals with the funding. There'd be $1,000 appropriated. That money would come from money in the bill, currently in the DE amendment, awarded from the general fund to the Terrestrial Invasives Institute.
Thank you, Mr. Sullivan. Representative Hamilton?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I'll move that amendment.
Thank you, Representative Hamilton. Representative Hamilton moves the A18 amendment. Representative Wiginius, what's your pleasure with the amendment?
I think in this case I'm going to just tell people to vote the way they want to vote. I am a supporter of industrial hemp. However, there is no fiscal note on this bill, and I suspect it's going to come in higher than the $1,000. So with that, people will vote the way they want to vote.
Thank you, Representative Wiginius, and I imagine you can continue to talk to Representative Kahn in ways and means. Representative Torkelson? Representative Hamilton? Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Representative Hamilton. He renews his motion that all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Party arrives.
Members, we've come to the end of the amendments. Thank you for your time on this. Representative Wiginius, would you like to offer closing comments on the bill?
I think it's, the hour is late. I would just like to renew my motion that this be passed and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
You know, I would, I apologize, I should have, before doing that, I should have asked if anybody from the public wishes to speak in support of or in opposition to the bill. Now would be the appropriate time to come down. Seeing no one approaching, Representative McNamara, did you ask to be recognized? I apologize, I missed you there.
No, it's okay. I was after Representative Wiginius. Representative Wiginius, this morning you offered, as I was scrambling to go through my pile, you offered what I believe was the A-10 amendment. It was referred to by the chair as technical amendment. I found it quite a bit later, and I thought I'd wait till the end. I'm wondering, Representative Wagenius, if you could explain the A-10 amendment. You didn't explain it at the time, or I would have asked questions at that time, but could you tell me what the A-10 amendment is and why it was done?
I would ask counsel to explain it because I got it from counsel.
Ms. Taylor, would you be able to explain the A-10 amendment?
Sure. The A-10 amendment on line 1.3, if members have it in their packets, there's a change in the base amount. There was just a wrong date. This would change it to the correct fiscal year for the base amount that was stated in the bill. And then on line 1.4, this is deleting the article name. The term policy would be replaced with fiscal implementation provision.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. And
Representative McNamara.
Mr. Chair and Representative Wagenius, why did you change Article 2, which said agriculture, environment, and natural resource policy, to now say agriculture, environment, and natural resources fiscal implementation provisions?
That was the suggestion from council.
I think, Ms. Taylor, if you'd like to explain that.
Mr. Chair, members, we were instructed to change the head notes to reflect the fact that it was not policy, that it was provisions that were necessary to implement the appropriations.
Representative McNamara.
So, Mr. Chair, so council was told to change the title of the bill?
Ms. Taylor.
Not by me. I don't know. I think that's just the protocol within how they do things. I did not ask this.
Ms. Taylor.
Mr. Chair, I don't know exactly who, but I heard the message from Bill Marks.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor.
Okay.
This was a technical amendment.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. The one last thing I would do is I would move that staff is authorized to make technical corrections necessary to reflect the will of the committee and spreadsheet. This is standard operating procedure. All those, including the A11 effective date. Mm-hmm. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say nay. The motion for this amendment is adopted. Staff is able to do the correct changes there. Thank you, Representative Wagenius. And with that, she renews her motion that House File 3158, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say nay.
No.
Motion prevails. The bill passes and sent on to the Ways and Means Committee.
Thank you, members. We will see you tomorrow, I believe, in 5.
We have one final item of business. Okay. Representative Freiberg, would you like to move the minutes?
Yes, I will move the minutes to the March 20th meeting.
Thank you, Representative Freiberg. You move the minutes to the March 20th meeting. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say nay. The motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. With that, members, thank you for all your good work. I appreciate it. We're here late, but we got a lot accomplished today. So thank you. This meeting is adjourned.